mothers hug their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns. A million innocent people lit up springtime.
This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. is marking the fifth anniversary of the September 11th attacks today. The World Trade Center site fell silent four times to mark the moments when the airliners hit the towers and when the towers fell. President Bush is joining in the tributes. He plans to visit all three sites of the attacks today and will later address the nation in a televised speech. A new poll finds that more Americans blame the Bush administration for the 9/11 attacks now than 4 years ago. Another poll also shows 41% of respondents blame the Clinton administration for the attacks. That's down only slightly from a poll taken less than a week after the attacks. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Palestinian Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh have reached a major deal they hope will help bring peace to the region. Under the agreement, the Hamas-led government will be dissolved and replaced with a national coalition government that's expected to begin in the next 48 hours. A new tape from top al-Qaeda leader calls on Muslims to up their resistance to the U.S. He hints that future attacks will target Israel and the western-leaning countries in the Persian Gulf. In the tape, Ayman al-Zawahiri says bringing more troops to Iraq and Afghanistan is a futile endeavor. In Iraq, a suicide bomber blew himself up aboard a minibus full of army recruits, killing 16 and wounding at least 6. 13 others were killed in separate incidents. In Iraq, the Marine Corps' chief of intelligence says success in the Anbar province is unlikely. The Washington Post says the colonel blames a lack of troops and the absence of a viable local government. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist says the detainees at Guantanamo Bay are being treated safely and humanely. Yesterday, he and other senators visited the detention center. However, they did not see the 14 top alleged al-Qaeda detainees who were recently transferred there from secret CIA prisons. Iran is reportedly considering suspending its uranium enrichment program for up to 2 months, but that depends on whether certain conditions are met, including no UN sanctions. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said the U.S. may consider joining negotiations if the program is suspended. And crime is up again after a 10-year decline. The Justice Department reports homicides were up nearly 10% last year, with the biggest increases in the South and Midwest. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The lettuce industry in California's Salinas Valley is under review by federal and state officials. That's due to concerns over a deadly strain of E. coli. A new forecast from the National Association of Business Economics says the nation's economic expansion that began 5 years ago still has staying power, but the group says growth will be sluggish through the rest of the year. It's the largest income tax dispute in U.S. history. Pharmaceutical company GlaxoSmithKline will pay the IRS $3.4 billion to wipe its debt clean. The number of cellular connections worldwide has just hit the 2.5 billion mark, growing by 40 million each month. The largest growth comes from China and India. China reports a record trade surplus of nearly $19 billion last month, up nearly 80% from last August. U.S. consumer spending is credited for the jump. Dell will delay its second quarter report and suspend its share purchase program. That's due to an ongoing investigation into the computer maker's accounting practices. The Detroit News reports Ford Motors is preparing a deeper round of salary job cuts. An announcement could be made this week. And steelmaker IPSCO is buying steel tube maker NS Group in a nearly $1.5 billion deal. Light sweet crude settled today at $65.48. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 5 points, NASDAQ up 7, S&P up 1. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I feel like I've been in an alternate universe. It's Monday. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thrilled to death to be back with you, back in my happy little comfortable little chair in our comfortable little studio in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, our undisclosed location. And we had a marvelous, marvelous time in the District of Columbia. Met some incredible people. You know, I'm just blown away by D.C. cabbies. For a number of reasons. First of all, someday, I may be able to drive like them. I mean, let's put it this way. If you're a cabbie in D.C., the rules of the road are advisory at best. No U-turns? That's for the amateurs. These are professionals. No backing up in the middle of 16th Avenue with a delivery truck bearing down on you. Sissies. And moreover, you know, the attitudes. You know, these are working guys. And these, you know, when you bother to talk to them, you find out where America is, because you know what? They're America. And it's worth remembering that on September the 11th, 2006. When you bought, you know, because most people, I get the impression, and this is what a couple of them told us, most people don't talk. They just get in there and they sit there all, you know, well, take me to K Street. Yeah. And there you are. And they don't say another word until they pass the fare up. But in our instance, we made an effort to try to talk to people. And first of all, you know, I've got an idea. You want to impeach George Bush? Let's make the panel up of D.C. cabbies, because I didn't hear one of them that thought that he was worth the powder and or that he was worth the time it would take. No, that doesn't work either. Well, let's put it this way. I didn't find a D.C. cabbie who wouldn't vote for George Bush's impeachment. You heard probably Bruce Birch tell a little bit ago the story of the new mnemonic for George Bush that exists on the network now. Stupid guy. After all the hoo-ha and foo-fra of the motorcade that had to, you know, the screaming sirens and cars driving fast and bulletproof vehicle, just, you know, roaring down Constitution Avenue. And then Marine runs going across. You know, this is the stuff that attends the arrival of a monarch. You know what I mean? Sure. And then we get in the cab and someone remarks, well, you see he's home now, I guess. And the cabbie turns around and says, you mean the stupid guy? You know that all respect, all the panache, all the spirit of the presidency is gone when the cabbies just use the shorthand of the stupid guy to refer to the resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Yeah, you know what? I'll bet you that during the presidency of Bill Clinton, the cabbies never called him the stupid guy. No, nobody ever called Bill Clinton the stupid guy. Everybody calls George Bush the stupid guy. So that's where we are on September the 11th, 2006. And a word on September the 11th, okay? Just a word. Everyone has marked this anniversary as they saw fit and as they had the lights to do so. Mark Levine earlier today did a wonderful job talking about where he was in D.C. on 9/11. I don't have one of those stories because I was getting ready to go to work on a sunny, beautiful September morning and was just looking at the television as I headed out the door and just stopped in my tracks. And that was my day. That was my day. And just sitting there, we never left, oddly enough, ABC. Peter Jennings, God rest his soul, gave tremendous coverage that day. And we just sat and watched and watched and watched. So there's not a lot of detail in, but, you know, where were you? That's where. Now, a little word, a brief word, if you will, about such anniversaries. Do you remember the Millennium Scare? Oh my God, you know, the world's going to turn to caca at midnight on December 31st, 1999. When 2000 gets here, none of the computers will work. The water will turn off. There won't be any electricity. We're going to have to live like cavemen. You remember all that? And of course, it's the millennium. But of course, in the midst of all that, you had some cool, reasonable, calm, intelligent people saying, you know, it's an artificial number. It's a fake number. It's a thousand of something, but a thousand of what? It's a thousand years since Jesus did or didn't die. Or maybe it was a thousand years 3 years ago, or it'll be a thousand years 3 years later. So, it's utterly, you know, that kind of stuff is utterly artificial. So is this. I'm not saying 9/11 didn't happen. I'm saying that thinking that there is a particular reason for looking back at it because the number 5 is the mathematical symbol for how long it's been since it went down is a bunch of hogwash. So is the number 10, the number 15, the number 20. 17, 13, 9, and 2 are also equally hogwash. And my position on this obtains whether or not whether 9/11 was perpetrated, as would appear to be the majority opinion, by people Saudis, Egyptians, and Yemenis carrying box cutters aboard airliners, whether it was perpetrated by some sort of CIA black ops, whether it was 1962's Operation Northwoods brought to its full evil blossom. What I say applies whether or not George Bush placed charges in the basement of the Twin Towers and induced buildings 7 to just give it all up and commit suicide. All of this obtains. The fact of the matter is, it is done. Remember 9/11. Remember Pearl Harbor. Remember the Maine. Remember the Alamo. I remember the Alamo. Or I memorialize the Alamo. It's worth memorializing because a bunch of squatters and settlers, a bunch of white squatters and settlers decided to go to war with the government of Mexico because the government of Mexico had already outlawed slavery long before we had.
By God, it was Texas, and we's gonna have us some slaves. We'll fight that Santa Ana because we want to be free to have slaves.
So, yeah, remember the Alamo. Bunch of schmucks. We remember the Maine.
Remember the Maine?
Mainly we remember the Maine. Because it turns out that a ship that blew up in Havana Harbor turned out to be the trumped-up Casus Belli for William Randolph Hearst to gin up a war. It was Hearst or Pulitzer, I forget. No, you get me the picture, I'll get you the war. Remember? Remember the Maine. Remember that. Remember Pearl Harbor? Yeah, we remember Pearl Harbor. We remember an attack on us at a time when we had no active grievance against the country that attacked us. We remember that. And now we must remember 9/11, especially today, because it's 5 years, not four, not six. Well, I'll flesh this out a little bit on the other side. But, something wrong here. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The innocent can never last. Wake me up when September ends. Like my father's come to pass, 7 years has gone so fast. Wake me up when September ends. Here comes the rain again.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Minutes after the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid. I just want to finish up real quick so that I'm not misunderstood. I am not by any means suggesting that we do not remember the tragic events of September 11th, 2001. But what I am suggesting is that it's September 11th, 2006, that if that's your, but the rest of the time we're going to forget it. No, that's wrong. We remember, we memorialize September 11th in our hearts. It's no longer just a day. It is a day, as Franklin Roosevelt noted about December the 7th, it is a day that will live in infamy. It is the day that George Bush sat reading an upside-down book called My Pet Goat for 7 minutes, putting an entire school full of children potentially at risk. It is a day that he ran away in his little airplane to Louisiana and Nebraska, trying to go anywhere but Washington, D.C., where any decent leader would be. It is a day when the airplanes stood down. It is a day when NORAD could not communicate with the FAA. I could go on at length. We know what a horror it was. It is a day that followed on the heels of kind of sleazy Rice telling her boss, "Hey, boss, I got you a little daily briefing here. Says on the front, Osama determined to attack inside U.S. What do you think I should do with it, boss?" "It's about the tax cuts." "Oh, no, boss. Give it to FEMA. Give it to that Michael Brown or something. I don't care about that. I care about tax cuts." So, yeah, it's worth remembering. But you memorialize the people in your heart every day in the way that you go about your business. You memorialize the people who were slaughtered, murdered, tortured, killed on that day by swearing in your soul that it will never happen again. And you do not fulfill that oath by attacking the defenseless Middle Eastern countries that had not a damn thing to do with it. But of course, the Republicans don't understand that. Not at all, do they? No. So that's, that's where that stands. Let's go to the phones real quick. We are joined by our good friend David calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, David.
Good evening. Oh, where to start with? Where to start with? On the pad, on 9/11, well... I'm sorry to disappoint people, but I'm going to talk about this movie. I liked it better, as David Spade would say, when it was called 24.
Ain't that the truth?
I mean, everything about the movie was pretty much ripped from 24. It was just one of those really disappointing, quite obvious TV miniseries. And I really have to say, the whole idea for Democrats to get riled up over this movie, I just had to laugh. I was like, wow, whoever was the publicity, GOP, whoever was the consultant, the marketing campaign, they were genius on this one. They got Daily Coast out in full force, and they also got Harry Reid to write a letter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, it's kind of funny because people didn't pay attention. I read the Max Blumenthal piece, and I found it interesting. I wanted to find out about the writer. Oh boy, is this guy a doozy?
Oh yeah, I mean he's a fifth degree doozy.
Did you hear his backstory?
Oh, you mean Christian freak?
No, right
wing religion industry freak. That part I got.
No, the other guy, the screenwriter. Oh, he's a doozy. He's a doozy and a half.
Oh, okay.
An Iranian American? Is that by chance? I don't think so.
No, no.
An Iranian American who worships what? Oh, Islam. Okay, so now we're really getting to it. But wait, the backstory gets better. He was forced out of Iran, his family, by Islamic fundamentalists. And he moved to Colorado.
No, not Colorado.
Yes. He moved to Colorado with his family. And then he lived in the land of milk and honey and the free. And the birds were singing and everything. And then he suddenly realized, wow, I lived in a world of socialism and communism and fundamentalism. And wow, it's so much better here. And the GOP has told me how I can live my life. And when you watch the movie, I want you to pay attention to the guy's obvious obsession of everything, every little detail about Arabic radicals in their covet goals and everything. When one part I want people to pay attention to is, even if you haven't seen it, the dialogue in it. He goes, one when they're looking over Osama's compound, "Are you not men or cowards?
You are a woman."
that was like...
Yeah, it's dialogue straight out of...
Wait a minute. Yeah. But see, here's the hypocrisy. Is that guy, that screenwriter, I want you people to pay attention to, not the actors. I don't give a damn about the actors. I give a damn about the guy who wrote it.
Sure.
Would that guy stand on that hill with those CI agents, with a turret, gun, a bulletproof vest? No. So ask yourself, who is the coward? Who?
Fair question.
And the answer is this. They build themselves psychologically. I came up with this today. Psychologically, they build a bunker out of front page magazines, and they sit inside it.
Very good.
And they think, these appeasers. They're all appeasers, and we need to do something about it. And if you take something up and you say, you know, I just don't like that idea, and they say, well, you're a coward then. Well, are you putting blood on the table? Are you doing anything? And you know what? The problem with a lot of the Democrat people is that when they have debates, they don't go to this route, and they should go this route. And they should say something like, I'll tell you what, you get all your loyalists, all your GOP, Everybody in the whole United States who is a pro-war extremist, and if you line them up to war, even all the GOP fundraisers, if you line them up all the war, I'll meet you on that battlefield, and we can go find that invisible boogeyman together. It's not going to happen. And
No, it's not going to happen. They're going to, you know, they're going to leave the war to the Casey Sheehans and the Alex Arredondos and the 3,600 other. The good human beings, you know, poor kids, that kind of thing. That's who gets to do that.
I want people to pay attention to this guy, because he's not going to stop. He has projects and projects. And this is important. When you watch his films and everything, because he's eventually going to make one about Iran, people. Oh, yes. He's going to make one about Iran. And then when
who's to say it's not already in development?
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure ABC is excited. They're probably the only one who's going to be.
But you know, I've had a question put to me, David, and it's worth our attempt to answer it.
Right.
They're showing it without commercial interruption, right?
Right.
Who paid the bills?
That's a good question. And you know what's even a better question? Why are there so many black screens that say this is a dramatization? You know why I think? Here's why I think. Director's cut DVD? Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're working the marketing tie-in, David.
Oh, well, you know, and here's another thing. How credible can you be given to yourself? I said this on the Bruce Burks, but I'm going to recycle it.
That's okay.
I said, how credible do you have to be when you have a CIA agent? I keep flashing back, and I say, all I can keep thinking of is Hanging Tough. New Kids on the Block.
No, don't take me there.
That's all I, and I kept saying to myself, when that guy turns around, is he going to have a rat tail?
Ew. David, with that, we got to roll, brother.
All right, man.
I don't want that image. No. All right, thanks, man.
Later.
From 9/11 to New Kids on the Block. David has special perspicacity, special abilities. Let's talk to Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Which film are you talking about?
The Path to 9/11.
Well, you know.
You know, the mockumentary on ABC.
Well, I can't say that, you know, whoever wrote the screenplay was Sidney Howard or William Cameron Menzies or anyone like that, but I haven't made any type of judgment about that other than perhaps it's remarkable.
Well, David makes a good point about the nature of the screenwriting. I mean, this was a cook job, Jim.
Well, I don't know if it is or not. I'm not sure. I can't say for any. I can't speak with any authority.
Well, when it's
these things, and I don't pretend to.
Well, I will then, because when people.
Well, I don't see how you can.
Well, of course I can. It's documented fact. The production company that's out there comes out of the weirdo religious right. The screenwriter is an expatriate Iranian with an axe to grind. And more, what kind of expertise do you want? Do you want?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. In order to be balanced, I mean, the same thing could be said about Michael Moore. You know, you could say all.
No,
that.
Michael Moore is not funded by the right wing religion industry, Jim.
Saying,
and Michael
you know,
Moore is not an expatriate Iranian.
Well, you could say that Michael Moore has his own interest in doing what he's done. What I'm saying is, each person has his own point of view about these things and his own motives for doing it. And I'm not. Defining those motives, and I'm not trying to pass judgment on 9/11 and how it should be observed either. I mean, for me, it was an extremely rough day because I thought about
it was a horrifying day for all of America, wasn't it?
For 3,000 people, be they in New York, be they in Arlington, be they in wherever they were from. His only crime was to try to go to work or do their jobs. And, you know, these people are the people I have a great deal of compassion for. And I would think that it would be meet and right at least to grant the memories of their relatives some consideration. And, you know.
Which is precisely what I said.
Well.
Remember them. Keep them in your heart. Keep them in your heart every day.
Well, as far as by you're saying, by swearing an oath that this will never happen again, I don't think that's quite possible either, because I don't think there's any guarantee that something just as bad can't happen, because with the statistics the way they are, 80% of all the cargo coming into this country is not checked.
Right. And who's
there is no
where do you assign responsibility for that, Jim?
Well, you can assign it to the current administration, and you can assign it to the people who are being given, basically, who are being asked to make bricks without straw.
Yeah.
Now that's precisely what this is about.
Right. So and by that same analysis, if some sort of an attack happens via that method, then we need to make a movie saying it's Clinton's fault, just like this happened on September 11th, 2001, Jim, and we're only 5 years in, and suddenly we're in the middle of revisionist history that says it's Clinton's fault.
Well, you know, as far as Clinton is concerned, when Clinton had his tryst with Monica Lewinsky and he got on TV and said he had not had sex with that woman, the Republican Party did everything except give the children a national holiday to come home from school to watch it. And they dined out on that tremendously.
Yes, they did.
And you can expect that from them, of course. I mean, that's natural. They're going to try to put it on Bill Clinton. Naturally.
Well,
I mean, that's just, you say you've been in the belly of the beast. And, you know, of course, you've been in the belly of the beast in D.C. as long as I was in there. I lived there. But, I mean, that's just the way it is. Unfortunately, that's the game of politics.
Let me share
and
something.
By the way, your comment about the cab drivers, Bob, I've taken at least 100 cab rides to D.C. going to the National Airport, and most of the ones that I encountered didn't even speak English. They were from different parts of Africa.
Oh, Europe. No. My cab drivers were African. My cab drivers were Arab, were Arabic. My cab drivers were Pakistani. My cab drivers were Sikhs.
Really speak English.
Indians.
They understood the fare, and that's just about it.
And every last one of them spoke very good English because we bothered to speak to them.
Well, I did, too. But, you know, like I say, I think I've had about 100 more than you have. But, I mean.
Well, you win, Jim. Yay.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thanks. You've had 100 cab rides. I spoke to the guys, and you know what? I was amazed by what I found in talking to everyday Americans because, you know, several of them made it a point to remind me, I am an American, too, and this place matters to me, and I love my country, and I hate what that filthy little man in the White House has done to my country. And that impressed me no end.
I heard them say someone say the same thing about Clinton's motorcade.
No, I'm not talking about I'm not talking about the motorcade.
You talk about that, but I mean, I'm just saying, you know, you had a good experience with these people. That's wonderful. And you know, basically when I rode in these cabs, basically didn't have the experience you did. And I'm just making that point.
So, well, good. You know, one of the things that you bring up, you know, about the Republicans dining out on Monica Lewinsky and so forth. That I think it's worth remembering. I ran across this old link over at BartCop.com. This is from July 30th, 1996, Jim, and this is what I'm getting at when I talk about anniversaries. 9/11, you know, maybe we're looking in the wrong place when we say that, you know, today's the fifth anniversary of 9/11. Maybe the inauguration of George Bush is the anniversary we ought to be looking at, because I'm, like I said, I'm looking at an article here from July the 30th, 1996. Headline, President wants Senate to hurry with new anti-terrorism law. President Clinton urged Congress Tuesday to act swiftly in developing anti-terrorism legislation before its August recess. Quote, we need to keep this country together right now. We need to focus on this terrorism issue, Clinton said. But while the president pushed for quick legislation, Republican lawmakers hardened their stance against some of the proposed anti-terrorism measures.
Now, what were their reasons for doing that?
Well, let's go on and find out. Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott, Mississippi, doubted that the Senate would rush to action before they recessed this weekend. The Senate needs to study all the options, he said, and trying to get it all done in the next 3 days would be tough. What was their reason? Their reason was that they were not going to give this man any sort of cooperation. They are, you know, they love their party more than they love their country. They did it then, they do it now.
You're referring to they were not going to give President Clinton's administration credit for having done anything that would to ameliorate an existing oncoming tragedy. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. And this is, remember, Jim, this is not just pre-9/11. This is pre-USS Cole.
Well, you know, these things, Bob, I mean, let's face it, you could go all the way back to the 1960s, and you can trace the history of the antipathies between the Arabs and this nation. I mean, look at Munich 1972. I mean, if that wasn't a clear shot, I don't know what was. It was just how these people were feeling with the Black September movement. And then, of course, you have other movements that have come along since then. And, of course, as long as they were fighting the Russians in Afghanistan, we were content to...
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Well, yes, and we were content to give them weapons and support them. As a matter of fact, we gave them the Stingers that brought down the Soviet helicopters. That was one of the reasons that the Russians were defeated.
Right, and now that and there are lots of Stingers squirreled away in caves somewhere now.
And, of course, you know, it goes on. The Russians were repaying us for the Vietnam, or we were paying the Russians, we thought, for the, and by doing that, we were paying them for our Vietnam. You know, because, of course, of their support for the North Vietnamese.
Well, what's that old saying? An eye for an eye and the world goes blind.
Well, what I'm trying to say is this. I mean, it's really hard to say a whole lot about the things that have gone before, because they can't be changed and nothing's going to change. You know, the moving finger has written and moving it writes, and having written has moved on. And all your piety and all your wit will change a single word, and they cancel half a line. And that's the way I look at history.
Well, I understand that, Jim, but the question is, are we willing to be damned by not history but by our future, by those who say that we did not learn from it? Right now we are in smack dab in the middle of didn't learn from it. No matter all the piety, no matter all the carrying on of the Bush administration, we're not safer, as you point out, in terms of port security. We're not safer there. As a matter of fact,
with anything, we're even... probably with certain situations, I think it's proved in their efforts to destroy the government, they have made it even less effective as a means of protecting the American people.
Right, because they've tried to tear it down.
I mean, for example, when they established Homeland Security, they detached, they made FEMA a part of it and emasculated that agency, and you can see what happened in the response to Katrina. And I will make no good statement about the Bush administration, and I will be glad when these people are gone. And but as far as today is concerned, I don't think there's any real conspiracy that you can really generate about what happened in New York City. I mean, they've been pretty much explained why the buildings fell, why number 7 fell. I mean, it was right next to a Con Edison oil depot that was to be used for emergency generators, and that certainly didn't help that building at all. And, you know.
Well, my main concern, Jim, is that as long as we are looking backwards, we will never look forward. And in not looking forward,
well,
we will not see
it. Well,
you
have to look backward to a certain extent. Yeah, I mean, you want to know exactly what's going on.
I understand
what caused this. And so, I mean, so you don't want to repeat the mistakes of the future.
The sad thing is, though, we will never have the honest answer as to what happened, because all the wreckage of the plane was destroyed. All the wreckage of the building was destroyed. You know, when we put planes in hangars and rebuild them from constituent pieces when they blow up in midair, we go to great lengths to do that. We didn't even make that attempt with the 9/11 aircraft.
Bob, you could not extract those planes from all that wreckage. There's no way.
And yet a passport fluttered down to the ground.
Well, that's one of the ironies of the thing. I mean, you know, for example, look at Pompeii. There's a great deal of connection between what happened in Pompeii and what happened with the type of explosion that hit those buildings in New York City, okay? And there were really odd things that happened, just odd things. I mean, they found the top of a birthday cake, an ornament of a birthday cake ornament. It was untouched, or computers would fly through windows across the street, not broken. I mean, you know, when you have explosions like this, there are things, the laws of dynamics are defeated. But you basically had a pyroclastic flow coming from those buildings. And, you know, the heat was such that very little could be preserved, and how they were able to identify anything through DNA or whatever is, you know, beyond me. But I mean, I think if you take a look at what happened in Pompeii with Vesuvius, and you take a look at what happened when those buildings, they collapsed, you'll find some very striking similarities. And it's very interesting to note.
All right. Well, thank you, Jim. I do appreciate it. We've got an interview coming up. I need to roll on here.
Okay.
I appreciate everything you offer. Take care. Bye now. And we are moving on now. We're joined, and I apologize for the delay, but in holding him on. But I do like to keep our let our conversations reach their natural conclusion. We're joined at this time by John Lash from Illinois, running for Congress there in the is it the 14th district, John?
That's correct. Illinois' 14th district,
Home of Denny Hastert.
Current home of the third in line to the president. That's correct.
And we've spoken once before, John, and I'm proud to have you back on the program. How is you're fast approaching the critical time? You're smack dab in the middle of it in the campaign. How is it progressing?
It's going really good out here, just like everywhere else in the country. I'm sure people are fed up with the direction that the Bush administration is taking our country, and Dennis Hastert should be the one who should be providing oversight. And, and frankly, he should be the one who's impeaching George Bush, but he's not. So people are excited. I mean, I can tell you, I went door to door the other day, and I knock on every single door, Democrat or Republican, and 100%. Some Republicans, some Democrats, and some independents. It was 13 for 13 in about an hour's time, and most of them took yard signs. So it's going real good out here. People are ready for change. They're ready for a new direction for America, and I couldn't be happier about the way things are going.
John, how's the speaker responding to this all this campaigning on your part? Has he challenged you to a debate yet?
I challenged him to a debate.
I didn't think he was going to challenge you.
Yeah. I don't think he wants to. What are they going to say? They've ruined the country, and they want to stay in power.
Yeah, we've ruined the country, and we've done a great job.
Yeah, we'd really like to stick around and give us another shot.
Oh, but, mercy.
Yeah, we challenged him to a debate. He's been out here a lot more campaigning. You know, he wasn't at the sandwich fair. It's the second largest fair in the state of Illinois, and he wasn't there last year, but he made it this year. And, he drove by my office the other day, real slow drive-by, and I was stopping from my fundraising calls at lunch, and I got in my Jeep and followed to make sure it was him, and he pulled up to the hot dog stand and had a hot dog. So did he then
get out of one vehicle and get into another one?
I didn't watch and see. I just know he went over to the hot dog stand. Hey, once I got my confirmation, I figured I would I would call it a day.
Well, you know, I think that's probably good on your part. But has the campaign changed you, John?
Oh, I think it's nothing more inspiring than meeting people who are affected by the negative policies of the administration that drives you. If anything, it's just made me more of an intense campaigner and want to get out there and work until 9 o'clock when I can't talk to people anymore. It's a little rude to be on their doorstep after that time.
That's when you go campaign in the bars, John.
I wasn't going to say that on the radio.
I've been keeping keeping tabs on your campaign, and it looks like things are moving along very nicely. I think you've got Speaker Hastert a little bit shook up.
He is. I don't think he's really had to campaign in the last 20 years. So he's.
Well, incumbents aren't supposed to campaign, are they? I mean, it becomes a hereditary habiliment.
Right, yeah. Bring a little pork back, throw it around, and name yourself the representative for years to come.
Now, I want to ask you, we know that George Bush has never been to a military funeral since he started this war. What about Denny Hastert?
You know, I don't know that. I can tell you that probably one of the few mothers whose son acquired PTSD while he was serving in Iraq. It's over in neighboring Sandwich, Illinois. His name is Robert Stillwell. He served over there. It's a real sad story. Some kid was approaching his checkpoint, and a seven-year-old kid. And he didn't know if it was someone strapped with bombs or not, so he had to shoot the child. And he relives that moment every single day of his life now that he's back here in Sandwich. And his mother went to meet with Denny Hastert and got a sit-down meeting with him. He offered young Robert a job, but that's the best he could do. He wouldn't pass any meaningful PTSD legislation or do anything to get our troops out of Iraq. So.
And we all know what's happened to Veterans Affairs funding. John, when you get to Congress, do you have Veterans Affairs circled on your agenda?
You know what? I really would like to. Lane Evans is a hero of mine. He's a Illinois representative from the Illinois 17th Congressional District. He's a veteran. He's a Marine. Back in 1982, he was running in a 65-35 red district. Nobody said he could do it. He just campaigned as hard as he could, and he did it. So he's my role model as a candidate. He's my role model as what I want to be in Congress. And he retired recently because he's got Parkinson's disease. But I hope to serve in his shoes when I get to Washington, and we're going to pass a PTSD reform bill, H.R. 1588, and we're going to name it the Lane Evans bill. I'm very passionate about making sure that people that serve our country get the respect and honor they deserve and the health care that they need when they get back.
Well, I noticed somewhere along the way, and I can't quote chapter and verse right now, John, but I noticed somewhere that funding for traumatic brain injury research, which is the hallmark injury coming out of this war, the sort of poster injury, if you will, that the Bush administration has rolled back funding for that as well. I believe you're going to make it. Are you a little bit daunted by the amount of work? And it's one thing after another. It's Veterans Affairs. It's things like TBI. My God, the deficit is in trillions. The war that George Bush has said will not end during his presidency. The list is monumental of the work you have to do. Do you feel like you're up to it?
Absolutely. We have to. I mean, there's two directions. We can bury our heads in the sand, or we can stand up and fight. I've never been one to walk away from a fight, and this is very important. I love this country, and it's worth fighting for. But I'll tell you, it's not going to be that difficult to find the funding, too. We're going to cut out all those no-bid contracts with Halliburton and all George Bush's and Denny Hastert's friends that are making millions off the war, making millions off Katrina. And we're going to turn it into a productive WPA-style program to rebuild the Gulf Coast, and we're going to find the money the veterans deserve, and we're going to find the money to properly arm our troops, and more importantly, we're going to bring our troops home.
I think that's critical. It's a matter of bringing them home now. How do you respond to the whole cut and run debate, John?
It's not even out there. Of all the people that I talk to, again, Democrat and Republican, the defining issue in this election is going to be the Iraq War. Denny Hastert's trying to change it and try to appeal to those soccer moms with a child predator law that he's pushing right now in Congress, but they're not going to buy it. They know it comes down to this Iraq war. They're worried about their 15-year-old, 16-year-old sons and daughters facing a draft. So that's who my campaign's reaching out to, and he's aware of it, but, you know, he's got two choices. He can do the right thing and get us out of Iraq or cut funding for that and add some oversight to what's going on in the Bush administration, or he's going to lose this election.
Well, I'm moved by what you say about ending the war. You're not waffling around, are you? You're not talking about, oh, maybe we'll end it in 2009, we'll set a timetable in 2007, and blah blah blah. You mean to end the war, don't you?
Right. Well, the first thing you got to do is, I mean, from Congress, we have to cut funding for it. Until we see a plan to withdraw our troops from the president.
Let me
the ultimate command there, but you know, once they lose funding, there's nothing more they can't sustain a presence.
Well, I know how the Republican, pardon me, John, the Republican filth machine. I know how that thing works, and I know that the first thing out of their mouths when they hear something like that is, well, you don't support the troops. You want the troops to starve in the desert. You want to cut funding for the war. How do you respond to something like that?
I got a brother in Baghdad. If I don't support the troops, I don't know who does. It's how we have to fundamentally do it. I'll tell you, Bob. The only thing I do state is, you know, one of the things. What the other thing we can do from Congress, we can appoint General Shinseki or Zinni. The Democrats can, and you know, we have a balance of powers. There's three powers here. I don't expect the president's going to do the right thing. You know, if this, you know, cutting funding doesn't work, we're going to have to go the extra mile and appoint some military leaders to sit down with the Iraqi people and figure out a plan to get our troops out. There's some other moves we can make. We're not going to rely wholly on the president, but I don't think President Bush is going to be around for his full term once the Democrats take office in 2008.
Let's be very clear. What is your stance vis-a-vis an impeachment inquiry?
Well, the first thing we need to do is, you know, in my message out there in the campaign trails, we need to turn the country around. We need to fix the healthcare system, fix our economy, get our troops out of Iraq. And you know, that's my message. Impeaching the president and investigating into the pre-war intelligence that took us into Iraq, are on the list. I assume that I'm not going to be on the Judiciary Affairs Committee, and I assume that John Conyers will do the right thing.
I think you're pretty safe in making that assumption.
Yeah. The other thing I really wanted to talk about, just because I listened to the other conversation, if you got a minute.
Sure.
Is
you take all the time you need, John.
Well, I haven't really been following this 911 movie that they've got you know, out there.
Right.
You know, Clinton's to blame for 911. And I think it's important to get the facts out, because I was over in the Middle East at this time. And in 1998, after the bombings of the, you know, embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, I was one of the people that was recalled in to send the cruise missiles into, you know, into Bin Laden's training camps.
Right.
I'm not going to go through all the details here, but it only took the Republicans a whole 48 hours. I mean, Clinton went after Bin Laden, and within 48 hours, the Republicans were all screaming, wag the dog.
That's right.
Right. Come the same thing, Operation Desert Fox, getting a little closer to when Denny Hastert became Speaker. Operation Desert Fox, they went after, you know, Saddam Hussein and his palaces. And, you know, there was it was a several months buildup. They were violating the UN, and you know, of course, people were saying that they're hiding weapons and so forth. So Clinton went after Saddam Hussein's presidential palaces, trying to take out the leaders, not trying to, you know, hurt the regular army over there in Iraq, who just, you know, serve because they serve or they'll end up dead.
Or yes, and your kids starve, and yeah, they had a real Hobson's choice at the time, John. But you bring out a very valid point, and that is the recalcitrant. We heard a lot. Gridlock was what we heard about the Congress under President Clinton. That, you know, anything that looked like was going to be in his favor, they were going to do everything to stop, no matter the impact on the country. I made the statement earlier this evening. They love their party more than they love their country, these Republicans. And you experienced some of that, didn't you?
Right. Well, it made it hard to go after Bin Laden. I'll say, I mean, granted, we did what we could, going after Bin Laden and in 1998, but it just goes to show you what they had. There was no support of the troops. There was none of this, if you don't support Clinton, you don't support the troops, garbage. It was all wag the dog. And all they wanted to do was turn the conversation back to Monica Lewinsky, because they don't have a message. In fact, the other thing, this should be, I don't know why it's not on the nightly news, but the Republicans this time around, you know, I pointed out that Hastert doesn't want to run against, you know, on the record, because the record's a disaster. You know, millions of people out of work, millions of people without health care, and a crisis in Iraq. And they're running against Nancy Pelosi. In fact, there's a push-pull out here where, you know, it was the McLaughlin group, and they were calling people and saying, you know, would you be more or less likely to vote for Dennis Hastert if you knew that John Lash was going to vote for Nancy Pelosi? And she'd be speaker and forward her liberal agenda, blah, blah, blah. You know, they don't have anything better than to run against Nancy.
Well, they can't run against you.
Right.
I mean, you've got rock-solid credentials. You've served your country. You have been involved in some pretty high-stakes operations. You are, you love your family. You love your district. You love your state, your country. And they know that you're an intelligent enough man that they're not going to get away with plastering you. Oh, geez, he's a liberal,
right?
And so consequently, they have to try to hang Nancy Pelosi on you. And frankly, you know, so what? Nancy Pelosi, last I checked, is a darn decent human being,
right? Who wants to fight for a living wage and put American families first? And you know, if that makes her a liberal or me a liberal, then so be it.
Let me shift gears, if I may, please. I've got a couple of other issues I want to touch on.
Sure.
Are you familiar with the Employees Free Choice Act that is languishing in Congress as we speak?
Tell me more about it.
It basically levels the playing field to allow people to join unions if they want to, without quite so much interference from management. It prevents, for instance, management from bringing their employees into locked rooms and screaming at them about the union to keep them from signing cards. It's been described as a card check agreement. It could very well add literally millions of individuals' names to the rolls of organized labor in this country. Is that something you feel like you could get behind?
I absolutely support it. Yep. There's a greater reason to expand the union movement overseas. You know, there's other countries that workers here in America are trying to compete with sweatshop labor in China. And I support something called a sweatshop trade ban. It says we're not going to trade with those countries unless they want to pay a security fee bringing their goods across the line.
How do you define? I'm just curious, John. How do you define a sweatshop?
I think whenever the employees don't have the right to have a union, when they're working for less than a living wage. I mean, there's people in Mexico working right now. I read a story about a woman named Maria, and she's, you know, works half a day to pay for a gallon of milk. She lives in a cardboard box. She, you know, doesn't have any rights as a worker. Her two kids are both working at the same factory. One's 17, the other one's 14. And that's a sweatshop. When they don't have a choice in where they can work, they're not treated with respect. They don't earn a fair wage. And those people are the kind that need to have a union behind them so they can fight for living wages.
That makes perfectly good sense to me. What about, one of the things that Tom DeLay was involved in was trying to make sure that the Marianas Protectorate, which is a territory of the United States, that it maintained its sweatshop status. The horrible stories, John, of forced abortion, forced prostitution, literally prison camp conditions. Are you interested in expanding the congressional scope of inquiry and examination to make sure that that stuff doesn't go on inside the United States either?
Absolutely. Inside the United States, in the Northern Mariana Islands, Hastert is connected to that as well. His chief of staff was over there, and his son lobbied for greater protections for the businesses in Northern Mariana Islands. And it's going to be a campaign issue. I fight for something called a World Economic Organization composed of labor groups, composed of environmental groups, women's rights groups, that would be basically the inspector at arm of all these sweatshops and make sure that national rules are upheld and that there has to be someone to say this is a sweatshop, this is not a sweatshop, and who better to do it than workers' rights groups? There would be some sort of group to inspect it and say this is not a sweatshop. Here, and they get a sweatshop-free label, and then those goods could move between countries.
John, I've got a couple more things that I want to go into with you.
Sure.
Because you've got wonderful ideas. Are we okay for time with you?
I got plenty of time.
Great. You've mentioned wages. The minimum wage debate has gone, and you've used a key phrase as far as I'm concerned. You've used the phrase living wage. Now, we recently had a little firestorm in the Senate where they said, well, we'll raise the minimum wage $2 over the course of 3 years if only you'll give Paris Hilton a tax break. And, of course, that was the most cynical form of, when you're playing politics with poor people's lives, I don't think it gets more sick, perverted, or obscene than that. But by the same token, raising the minimum wage, John, $2 over 3 years.
It's not good enough.
It's a slap in the face is what it is.
Yeah.
Where are you on a living wage in the United States?
Well, I told you we need to have a living wage. I mean, I'm a carpenter. I think I've told you this.
Yeah.
There's guys I work with. They start them out at $9 an hour. These are guys that are single parents with one or two kids. They can't make it on $9 an hour. Yeah, $2 over a couple of years isn't good enough. Basically, a living wage says if you live in the city of Yorkville, that you ought to be able to afford to live in the city of Yorkville on one 40-hour-a-week job.
Well, that makes perfectly good sense to me because, that anything else is an assault on the 40-hour work week, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how I look at it.
Hand in hand with that is health care.
Mm-hmm.
How do we begin to address what very soon may blossom into a – it's already in crisis. I fear that our health care system in the United States, John, may be well on the way to blossoming into – if you can blossom into collapse. I think I'm mixing my metaphors there. But we could well be on the verge of a health care collapse in this country. How do you address that?
Yeah. Before I talk about health care, let me just say that hand in hand probably with a living wage, I would say, is a small business tax cut especially I think small businesses are lifeblood of the American dream. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have 50 or fewer employees, you shouldn't have to go out of business, especially because of, you know, astronomical cost of health care. And, you know, raising wages on some of these small businesses does make it harder. Then they have to look at shifting and getting rid of benefits. So if you're doing business in the United States and providing Americans with jobs, until we can fix this international trade problem that we've got, we need to give these guys a break and stop giving tax breaks to those companies that offshore their profits and then repatriate profits at 3%. So, you know, close the loops for the millionaires and help the guy that's trying to live the American dream is what I say. But we're holding a town hall meeting to talk about the health care crisis coming up on this coming Wednesday, actually, September 13th. There's a lot of solutions out there. The one I support, is National Health Care Program, basically expanding Medicare to every single person in the United States. It's clearly the most efficient health care system we have, and it'd save you 25% off the top just on overhead expenses alone. There's other things we can do, you know, for making sure small businesses get breaks if they, you know, get health care for their employees.
What about regulation? It seems like every other so-called civilized country has some level of regulation in the pharmaceutical industry, John. We seem to have gone backed away, philosophically, I guess, backed away from that, you know, oh, no, the free market, you know, and we can't regulate big pharma. What about reining some of that in?
Well, I guess, ideally, under Medicare for All, you would cover prescription drugs, and basically, whoever's in charge of Medicare, hopefully with a Democratic president, would negotiate lower prescription prices on behalf of all Americans. I mean, everybody in that buying club, that's the entire population of the United States, and negotiate lower costs. And when you pit one company against the other company, you should end up with the best deal. This is how the Veterans Administration does it, and I think there was a study done by Families USA showed that compared to Medicare Part D, the Veterans Administration was cheaper, not just cheaper, but 50% cheaper on 49 out of 50 drugs by negotiating. As far as, you know, regulating the industry, I think you have to start with negotiation, and, you know, that's a capitalistic approach. You know, as far as letting other pharmaceuticals or other drugs come from Canada or other places, I guess that depends on where those other places are and making sure they meet FDA standards. If they do, I don't see any problem with it, and they're paying their workers, a living wage in that country. But regulation on pharmaceuticals, probably the place that you have to start is with the FDA, and they should. You know, a lot of the companies that produce these pharmaceuticals also pay for the study and manipulate the process through the FDA, so they get an approval. And here's another thing Hassert did that never made the news, but in the last defense bill that had a emergency flu vaccine appropriations, the pharmaceutical companies wrote a shield in there. So, you know, if they produced a bad drug, basically said they couldn't be sued.
Right.
And the bill went through committee, and then Denny Hastert and Bill Frist slipped in this protectorate shield after it went through committee, and everybody went to vote, and they said, well, you're sure that protectorate shield's not in there? And they looked them straight in the face and said, it's not in there, and then everybody voted for it, and it was. So shame on the legislators for not reading the legislation. Shame on Denny Hastert and Bill Frist for breaking the rules. But that's status quo in Washington right now.
Well, it sounds like some of what you're saying, John, is predicated upon a reexamination or a fix or whatever you want to call it of Medicare Part D. Am I right in that assumption?
Absolutely. But again, why tinker around the edges with just Medicare Part D and make sure it's only available to seniors? Let's make sure everybody can have affordable health care in this country.
I absolutely agree. Now, as far as our trade deficit is concerned, John, and I know I'm just throwing darts, and I apologize for that.
Sure.
But I want to get as many. I'm getting some suggestions from the chat room, that kind of thing. our trade, you know, it's not just our budget deficit, it's our trade deficit. You know, you're talking about enforcing a no sweatshop ban. One of the things that we have to be cognizant of, and it's sort of an elephant in the room, if you know what I mean, is that one of the places where we might go and say, well, no, this is a sweatshop, we won't certify it, is China. And they're holding a lot of the bad paper that George Bush has hung all over the world. How do you deal with trade relations in a situation like that?
Well, again, China's going to have to raise their standard, or they're going to pay a security fee as those products come across the border. That money would be used to organize workers in China, organize workers in Mexico, organize workers in India, and make sure that they had access to a union. We're expanding the workers' rights movement overseas. As far as China, how is that going to affect their trade? I would assume they're going to cut back some of their trade. I want to balance the budget when I get there. I don't think that we should let China hold all the debt. It's unfathomable how all this happened.
I know, it makes your head hurt, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think our trade deficit last report I saw was sometime in February, March, and it was $727 billion. So somebody can correct me out there if they're wrong. You know, if anybody has ideas, I want to interrupt and say, just go to john06.com and hit the Contact Us button and write me an email. There's a lot of good emails or ideas out there, and a lot of the stuff I talked about came from the blogosphere, people who have talked to me in the streets of this district. But, going backwards, I think of that $727 billion, $200 of it comes from China. So we're in debt to China, and we're going to have to stop spending, George Bush spending like a drunk sailor. But, it's not going to be hard to streamline the budget, I don't think, once you cut out all those special contracts out.
I think you're probably right, and I remember Dennis Kucinich saying a couple of years ago that where national health care was concerned, you could probably pay for it out of the lost money you could shake out of the Pentagon's couch. Just being a little bit financially responsible, because for a party that claims that it's conservative and fiscally careful and we're going to watch your money, man, I've watched the money just fly out of Congress since 1994. I'm careful of the word pork too, John, because they call my Senator Robert Byrd the king of pork.
Uh-huh.
And they've blistered him with that because he's actually gotten some federal money to West Virginia for a change, instead of it going somewhere else. And that makes him the king of pork because we've got an FBI center here, and we've got proposals on, and our congressman Nick Joe Rahal has done a good job bringing some transportation dollars to increase road infrastructure here in West Virginia. So like I said, I'm careful about the word pork. But do you think it will be possible for a Democratic Congress, including yourself, to be a little bit more judicious in the sending of money home to the districts?
Absolutely. People ask all the time in this district, what are you going to bring back? And I tell them, I'm not pledging anything, and here's why. I mean, the first thing I want to do is balance the budget. This is ridiculous. What's happening in Congress is they're passing unpopular legislation. They're having to buy votes to get it done.
Well, yeah, that's what it is.
And I also want to say that Robert Byrd is one of my Senator Byrd is one of my heroes because he's one of the few guys that stood up and said, Iraq is the wrong war to be fighting. Back when nobody else was saying it, he's a hero in my mind.
Well, he called Congress to account, saying that they were ceding their constitutional authority, and he was correct in that regard.
Absolutely. Yep.
Now, you talk about, what are you going to bring back to your district? I would hope, perhaps, that you could look at someone, John, who asks you that question and say, look, a baby born in Yorkville right now owes $40,000 to the federal government because of George W. Bush. I don't necessarily want to bring something back. I want to take something away. I want to take that millstone off of that newborn baby's neck.
Absolutely. And shift some of the spending to, from the defense budget into education, I think, is probably a big priority of mine. That'll help folks out here make sure everyone has an equal education opportunity, and also they won't have to keep raising taxes like they do.
Well, it's a, you know, you've got a wonderful campaign. You're going door to door. You're doing it the right way. John, is there any final message that you'd like to get out to the listeners tonight?
Well, you know, it's a national campaign. This is the guy who's third in line for the president. We're always asking for help right now. We're at a little bit of a crunch. We're trying to raise money to get our yard signs up, and they're only $2 a piece. So any contribution from anybody, any level, is going to make a huge difference.
Can folks can contribute online, right?
Absolutely, john06.com. It's very simple.
Okay, and
you know, anybody else there that's listening out there, and you're you know, you haven't got involved in your local Democratic Party, you haven't started going door to door. I don't care where you live, you need to get involved.
Thank you, John.
This is our moment in history. This is our Vietnam. It's our time to stand up.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And please, by the way, your campaign assistant there, Jennifer, please give her my regards. Thank her kindly for facilitating this interview, this conversation, if you will. And tell her that anytime we can be of help, we stand at the ready, John.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed being on, and she's one of those people that stays up till midnight or one working. She's a dedicated hero.
She is indeed. Best of luck, and I look forward to getting an autographed copy of you being sworn in, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. John Lash, Illinois' 14th district, running against John, what does Bart Kopp call him? Or running against Denny, Bart Kopp calls Denny Hastert, the sweaty wrestler. Yeah. Denny Hastert, the sweaty wrestler. This is inspiring stuff. You know, we had a conversation with Tony Tripiano. We've had a conversation with John Lash. We've got an upcoming conversation with Mike Callahan at some point. We've got a conversation coming up a little bit later this evening with Brian Moore down in Florida. These are people who want to affect positive, progressive change in the United States. And I feel comfortable saying that when John Lash gets to Congress, when Tony Tripiano gets to Congress, when Mike Callahan gets to Congress, when Brian gets to the Senate, I feel comfortable in saying that they would be responsive to the needs of the people as opposed to the needs of the political action committee or the needs of some big money corporation. Let's get behind him. John06.com. He needs your help. He needs your money. Sorry, that's how it is. You want progressives in Congress, you gotta support progressives for Congress. Because you know what? Big Pharma won't. And the insurance industry won't. And the banking industry won't. And the K Street lobbyists won't. You want progressives in Congress, by God, you support them. Sorry, don't mean to be so nasty about things. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
We often hear claims Muslims don't condemn terrorism.
And that Islam condones violence.
As Muslims, we want to state clearly
that those who commit acts of terror in the name of Islam are betraying the teachings of the Quran and the Prophet Muhammad.
We reject anyone of any faith who commits such brutal acts.
And will not allow our faith to be hijacked by criminals.
Islam is not about hatred and violence. It's about peace and justice.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's 1 in 6 people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
Stop it, Agnes. I love that song. You know what? I'm probably going to be as misunderstood in saying this as I was in asserting that we live the memorial to the people who suffered and died on September 11, 2001, that we make ourselves memorials to them and we live it every day. I'm probably going to be as misunderstood in what I'm about to say as what I said there, and that is this. I resent the sons of bitches who took September from me. I sure God resent the SOBs, the dirty, rotten, stinking murderers, and the negligent, criminally insane thugs who took what is quite possibly the most beautiful month of the year from me. Because I do think about what happened on September 11th, 2001. I do think about it. And it did not have to happen. Now, the right little right-wing monkeys used to try to argue, well, thank God George Bush was president on September 11th. Horse hockey. Fiddlesticks. If Al Gore had been put in the White House as he should have been and had administered unto him the oath of his office, I will sit here with absolute crystal clarity and tell you that September the 11th, 2001, even now would be just another beautiful early autumn, late summer day. Because they were paying attention. On the other hand, the Bush administration had a recession going on. There is a USA Today clipping that's you got. Well, there's Bartkop again. What a resource he is. You can go out. You can find it if you go searching around through there. September 10th, 2001. From USA Today. Economic downturn. No relief in sight. And a 30% president. We tend to forget that George Bush has been a 30% president before. A 30% president becomes a 90% approved president overnight. Lucky me, I hit the trifecta. Oh, yeah. There's so much we have to take back. We have to take back the month of September. We have to take back an America that actually cherishes cabbies. We have to take back an America where right-wing ideologues don't stand up and besmirch the history of the House of Representatives and the Senate by talking about their terrifying fear of Mexican women scrubbing toilets for $3 an hour. We have so much work to do. So very, very much. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Luke Waits calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, how are you?
Hi, Bob. Well, like I said, you were talking about that. Now, just remember that America's mayor, Mr. Giuliani, just remember him on the 10th. They were talking about maybe tossing him out of office because he tried to throw his wife out of the mayor's mansion.
Out of Gracie Mansion. You're darn right. Absolutely.
It's like I say, I just keep on going. Please, please put him up for them to run in 2008. I just want to watch Pat Robertson just turn into a pretzel. You know, when you say, oh, so now you all approve of adultery, do you?
Yeah, that's the exact noise, isn't it?
Oh, it's like I say, I just want to hear those vertebrae just clink. I saw that thing over at Bartkop, the thing about the 1996.
Yeah.
And I remember that. You know what I mean? I remember when they had Al Gore was in charge of part of the thing where they were wanting to upgrade airport security.
Oh, yeah.
He said, that's going to cost at least $2 billion. We'll never be able to withstand it. Because they had talked about reinforcing doors. And
yeah, because, see, that's one of the things, Luke, that CEOs, you know, you get up there and you make so much money that you think you're untouchable. Mm. CEOs need to remember to be careful about that little word never. We'll never be able to survive a $2 billion security upgrade.
These are the guys who've already gone through 16 billion.
Yeah.
Since September the 11th.
It's amazing, isn't it?
But, when I think of that thing, you know, I was listening to Randy earlier this evening, and she was talking about this thing, you know, about the crockumentary. And was talking about it, said, you know, $40 million being shown without commercials, who's paying the bill?
Yeah.
And like I say, the one they came up with, the best, they still think eventually it's going to trace back to probably to SCAFE.
The Heritage Foundation, Club for Growth, Americans for Tax Justice. But, you know, and because these things are all 501c3s, Luke, they don't have the transparency that a publicly traded corporation allegedly does.
Well, the thing of it is, they said somebody, one or two people that they are going to make complaints to the FEC, that, you know, doesn't this qualify as a six-hour commercial for the RNC?
Well, it does. And the fact of the matter, you know, look, I'm you know how I feel about the First Amendment. I'm absolutely bananas in trying to defend it and keep the government. You know, I mean, I'm about the First Amendment the way Charlton Heston was about the second one.
Yeah.
I don't see much point for the second without the first.
No. Without the first, most of them don't mean a thing, really.
Sure, exactly. Because without the first, then why shouldn't they be able to come in your door and you know, knock in the fourth, you know, everything that's in the fourth? Without the first, you know, an element of free speech is non-speech, so the fifth goes out the window. So, you know, I'm all over the First Amendment, but Luke, dadgummit, if you're going to put up a piece of unmitigated BS that's just cut out of whole cloth, then you don't get to call it a docudrama. You don't get to call it based upon fact.
Well, you saw where he had that thing. He was showing that thing where over, like, in New Zealand. Now, I know they were doing it in other places in the world, where that's the way they're saying this is based on a true story, you know, or this is based on, you know, saying that this is essentially a documentary.
I know.
I mean, you know, he shows, I think it's Bart Copper, he showed a couple of the pages, you know, showing where the, where they, how they've been advertising it.
Oh, yeah, I saw, well, there was video of it, too, and I watched it. You know, here we go talking about the movies on the radio again. That's just bad for me, Luke.
But you know what I mean? But like I say, that's the way they're spreading this around the world. And think of the people around the world seeing this going, you know, it's like, you really think we're going to buy this crap? You know?
Well, yeah, and I mean, it was some sort of not American English accent that said, on the very day that it happened, a film that will tell you exactly how it happened in the words of those who were there.
It's like, the only good part about this is, just wait till the Guardian and the BBC tear into this. Because they'll come at it with wearing spurs. And it's like, say, they'll follow, well, you know, they'll take that story apart.
I'm awfully glad that they will, Luke, because, you know, our Johnny on the spot mainstream media, not so much.
Well, you know, like I said, isn't it amazing, though, how this weekend, that with this story, the thing came out Friday from the Senate.
Yeah.
Two of the five parts. And you know, I didn't see Nelson, Jay Rockefeller, or I didn't see Carl Levin, or anybody, you know, that put that out. I didn't see them anywhere.
But you get Dick Cheney on Meet the Russert.
Oh, God.
There's really nothing new there.
It's like, say, Tim, Mr. Russert, can we get you a spine? Just try it on for size. See how you like it.
You know, we'll get you a couple of those metal ones that they put in. Yeah, and we'll
pretend it's Howard Dean. Come on, you can do it. Come on, you know.
Yeah.
Just looking right in the eye and just telling me he's lying to your face. But did you like the quote? I had forgotten about this quote, and I saw it. Somebody had posted this, I think, in Washington Post this morning on one of their chats, the Michael Eisner quote about 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
We aren't going to get involved in anything that political during an election year.
No, and then
Fahrenheit 9/11.
Right.
Amazing how the winds have shifted.
Well, you know, it's the way they responded to Fahrenheit 9/11. It's how they responded to the Reagan biopic. You know, what was there in the Reagan movie that was so objectionable? It was just a movie that said, you know, Reagan was sick in the final years of his presidency and pointed that out. Everybody knows it, but, you know, thou shalt not speak ill of St. Ronnie.
Well, you know, it's like we said, you know, when Ronnie died, it was like, you know, they had the funeral for 5 days, and it's like, he's dead. Open the casket. Put the stake in him. You know, it's over.
I know. But
he ain't coming back. We swear, it's been long enough. He ain't coming. But that thing I still always worried at the same time was right then was when all these homeschools started going up. I said, oh, I hate to imagine what they're teaching them about Ronnie. You know, that's right. Ronnie was the light of the world. those Democrats living in the seventh ring of hell. You know how it is. Like,
well, you know, and you know, let's add another thing to John Lash and Tony Trupiano's and Mike Callahan's list, okay? And all the other good challengers running to take the House back. Let's square up some media ownership rules.
Like I say, I just have two words: fairness doctrine.
Yeah. I'd love to
see him put that in just to watch four or five of them just have apoplexy.
Well, I'd like to see TV and newspaper and radio companies actually out there competing again. My hometown, Luke, is, you know, it used to be a vibrant little community of little tiny companies running little tiny radio stations, and now it's one or two companies own everything.
That's pretty much it here too, but had it there for a second, lost it again. That happens every once in a while.
Yeah, it happens to me all the time. I put it on a brain cell that's on the way out.
It's more like, you know how it is. It's like the old quantum leap thing. You know, it's Swiss cheese again.
Hey, Luke, you have yourself a great night. All right,
Bob.
Take care.
Hey, bye, Bob. One quick thing.
Yeah, yeah.
How soon into the jug-eared Louth story tonight, which he can actually mention 9/11 and be right? Do you figure is he going to either ask to make the tax cuts permanent? Time to invade Iran. You know, we should have something like a betting pool. You know, which one of these five things do we figure he's going to mention first?
I'm betting Islamic fascist. I'm taking the long shot, Luke.
Well, it's one of those things. I figure it's taking the fight to Iran.
Does that foolishness start at 9 Eastern?
Yep.
Okay, I may have to check, get Agnes to fire up the old C-SPAN computer.
Well, I told Agnes also that here just in a few minutes, Mr. Oberman's doing another one of his commentaries.
Oh, good.
Right before George comes on. So this ought to be good.
They're going to put him in an orange jumpsuit. Honest to God, they are.
Well, like I say, they have a new wing down there at Gitmo. All righty, then. Y'all have a good evening. I'll talk at you down a week.
All right. All right, Luke, take care. Our buddy Luke in Knoxville, Tennessee. Watching the media and sharing it with us. Let's just keep it rolling. Just a second here, please. We're joined at this point in time by a man I consider to be a good friend of the program, Brian Moore, calling from the state of Florida, Senate candidate in Florida, running against both Cruella Harris and Bill, what me, a Democrat, Nelson. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob. Glad to be back again, and thanks for inviting me.
Now, I noticed that Cruella, I should be better than that. You know, Mrs. Harris's resounding victory in the Republican primary. Somehow or another, there weren't exactly parties in the streets, were there? Did I miss them?
No, I don't think you did. I think that there was a little bit of disappointment, even in the Republican Party. I think a lot of people were hoping that one of the others would emerge. But when you run against three people, I guess you split the vote, and she came out on top.
Yeah, with what? I forget what her percent. Who cares about
it? It was pretty high. It was 49%, but she was in the paper every day. And even if you know a lot of it was negative, you know, she seems to be charismatic to the Republican Party people.
Well, she's probably charismatic to newspaper editors the way that you slow down for a car wreck.
Well, she flirts too, and she wears tight dresses, and she's very attractive physically. So, and she rides horses and things like that. So, great photo ops and the press. I think they have a love hate relationship with her.
Well, that's probably not surprising. And frankly, even as a politician, there's no such thing as bad PR. How are things going? But really, what matters? How are things going in the Brian Moore camp?
Well, I think it's going very well. We were endorsed by the Green Party, the state of Florida Green Party, and I've gotten a number of interviews, even though it's been with mostly right-wing radio stations in Melbourne and in Boynton Beach and up in St. Augustine's. But I did get a couple of TV interviews. One was a half hour from Norma Sherry, who has access to about 400,000 homes, and she loved my my platform, the fact that I wanted to impeach Bush and was promoting a national health plan for all Americans and living wage. And the other night on a Tampa program, I got real specific on numbers and said that that there's 300 million Americans, and 200 million of them are working adults, and if 20% of that population were making $10 or less in low income level, they should be given $10,000 per year on top of the salary that they're making now. So we'd have approximately 40 million Americans that would be given $10,000. So that would amount to about $400 billion a year that the federal government would run this living wage program. And it would actually replace the welfare system and the welfare programs and all the administration. And I think it would reduce a lot of expenditures on drug abuse and crime and even mental health services. Some people would be able to buy a home and invest maybe in better education for their children, and it would be a real shot in the arm for real estate. So I think that the program created a wave of strong interest on the part of the average Floridian.
Well, that's an exciting prospect, Brian. You talk about raising people out of poverty and things, and there's things out there like the food stamp program. And, of course, anybody who knows the genesis of that knows that it started with commodities, and commodities were not given away to the poor as a way to help the poor, but as a way to prop up commodities producers.
Mm-hmm.
What about things like the food stamp program, which is administered by the U.S. FDA, and frankly, you know, a single widow, 70 plus years old, who gets standard social, you know, $700 in Social Security, that kind of thing. You know, I think she qualifies for something like $27 worth of food stamps in this country now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even there, that basically gives plants a seed in my mind that. They're going beyond people that are not employed, but are in a poverty situation. There could be some other type of program that would give them a stronger income, you know, in the that would be able to be placed on top of their Social Security, maybe, so that it would replace the food stamp program as well. I mean, we have such an imbalance in our society, the haves and the have-nots, and even the low-income people and moderately middle-income people. So we will continue to have greater social problems, more homicides, more violence, more divorce, if we continue down this road of the dollar, the ability of the person to purchase items gets worse. So salaries are getting worse, less health benefits, no pension plans, outsourcing of jobs to foreign countries. So we need to really have radical reform. And actually, this concept is really an idea of the Republican and the conservative people. I think a fellow by the name of Murray, who's conservative, is promoting this idea because he thinks it would help the economy and the small businessman, and I do too. So I'm willing to embrace it as long as finally we can give a program that will help the little guy.
Well, exactly, because, you know, we talk about things like this, Brian, but we have to look at them in the larger context of what's going on in America. You use a word like radical reform, and, of course, that word's been demonized as well. And if you radical, oh, my God, he wants to fly the hammer and sickle over the Congress. That kind of stuff. That's not what you mean. Well,
I'm not afraid of those words, though. I mean, why should we be so fearful of being politically correct? I mean, of not being politically correct.
If what's going on right now is what's not radical?
What's not going on? It is radical to the, you know, the fascism, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, the loss of our rights.
I'm up for radical.
Well, yeah, that is radical. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's radical in the negative sense.
I mean, and that's what I was getting at, Brian. We've had radicals in control since at least 1994, where Congress is concerned.
Fair enough. I mean, hit this before, but both major parties take their big money from corporate America. We have a corporate dominance, a corporate government, a corporate welfare. The corporations run our country, and we need to take these human rights that we've given them away from them. You know, we have more rights. We're human beings. We have more. We should have more rights than they. We should be able to control our own destiny in our country.
Well, exactly, Brian. How do you begin to affect some of that change? For instance, a couple of weeks ago, I'm reading about DuPont Corporation. They're not in trouble. They're not filing bankruptcy. I've talked about this on the show.
Oh, and the CEOs are getting big salary bonuses.
Yeah, bigger than big, Brian. And yet they just got approval to rape their pension plan.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is why we need public funding of political campaigns, okay, so that we can get rid of these permanent incumbents, these people that just take money from corporate America. You know, and if you deprive them of that, if you put them on an equal plane, then you got a ball game. I mean, I still recognize that even though I have hopes and I'm the only anti-war candidate, and the only candidate in the Senate race asking for Bush's impeachment, that it's still difficult to compete against Bill Nelson's $18 million and Catherine Harris, she's got like $14 million, okay?
Yeah. What about, well, do you think you might level the playing field a little bit If you could get on the stage in a debate with those two?
Well, definitely. And, you know, National Public Radio and all, and their 25 affiliates here are sponsoring the first debate, and they've only invited Bill Nelson and Catherine Harris. So I'm going to write them a letter and basically, you know, what is this, public radio, National Public Radio, and you, you know, what kind of service are you providing to the public? The airways we own, they don't own them. I mean, you know, how can they look themselves in the mirror and justify this? But no, they're going to justify it based on the traditional things. They got more money. They got their permanent incumbents.
Or they'll haul out, well, you know, we're only inviting the viable candidates.
Exactly. But we're talking to the status quo here, you know, the establishment, okay? NPR, they're part of the establishment, too. So we just got to keep hammering away at them and, you know, and expose them and embarrass them and make them deal. They got to say no. And that's part of my campaign. You know, I'm making a statement, okay? You got to deal with me as a citizen. I have a right. I'm on the ballot. I'm qualified. Why aren't you recognizing me? How democratic are you? How American are you?
Yeah, it's not like you're running under the anti-UFO party banner,
right,
Brian. I mean, I loved our last conversation. I'm not gooning on our UFO friends. But I loved our last conversation because you sounded a lot like the people who I trusted and listened to growing up who gave me my civics lessons.
Well, you know, Bob, the St. Petersburg Times, the largest newspaper in the state of Florida with about a 450,000 circulation on Sundays, did a feature story, a 2,100-word article on me. And they basically were sympathetic, and they said, the guy doesn't have a chance, he doesn't have any money, he's not an incumbent, but he's credible. He's credible, he's sound, he's solid, he's decent, but, you know, our system doesn't allow him to get into the, you know. So they were recognizing that, but, and that's half the battle, is being recognized as being credible and not, you know, not a nut. So, but it's still an uphill battle.
Well, it certainly is. But you mentioned, and I read the St. Petersburg Times article. What are you going out knocking on doors? How are you trying to get the message out these
well,
days?
Well, I'm, you know, we're calling all the newspapers, I mean, all the radio stations and the television stations, and I'm going into, there's 67 counties, okay, and I've been to 28 counties already. I've got about 44 to go. And I'm going to the peace groups. I'm participating in the anti-war demonstrations. I just came from in front of MacDill Air Force Base about 20 minutes ago. We had a five-year anniversary memorial in public with about 100 other anti-war people. And you know, I'm out there in the streets and in front of supermarkets and appearing in libraries and announcing to the public, I'm here to talk about my opposition to the war, my desire to impeach the President of the United States. We need a national health plan for all Americans. We need a living wage, and you know, and hopefully that, if that's reported, that word of mouth, okay? And I'm depending on the peace movement and the progressives. I mean, all I need is 34% of the vote now, and you know, I think it would be in. Actually, this is going to sound heretical, but I think it would be in Catherine Harris's interest to have me participate in the debate. I mean, you know, Bill Nelson is a Republican. I mean, he's voted for the war. He's voted for the Patriot Act. He's voted for the bankruptcy bill. He repealed the estate tax. He voted for the Flag Amendment. He voted with the Republicans for Terri Schiavo to continue to be plugged in on life support systems despite the husband and the doctors.
When has he found time to be a member of the opposition party there, Brian?
I don't know, but he's a tan Lieberman, you know?
Yeah. I wonder where you got that line.
You. Yeah, and that's another thing that we do have. We're sending out fundraising letters to about 1,000 people this week. So if we get enough money, we're going to hopefully call upon you to be our voice in our radio ads.
I'll be more than thrilled to do that, Brian.
Well, thank you. I like your idea, though, about more Brian instead of Brian Moore.
More Brian, less Nelson.
I've used that a number of times, just like these other phrases. So you're already being.
I'm glad I can be of some help, because like I said in our last conversation, I hesitate to endorse third party candidates. And I'll be honest, I'm playing with a little bit of fire in your race in Florida, because the idea of Catherine Harris sitting in the United States Senate is enough to make me rip my clothes off and sit in sackcloth and ashes for the next 10 years.
Yes, but Bob, let me repeat this again. If Bill Nelson is reelected, we will still have the war, we'll still have the Patriot Act, we'll still leave health care up to the free market. You know, he authored a bill to promote more detention centers for illegal aliens and immigrants. I don't know how you feel about immigration.
Oh God!
But I'm a guy that believes that the economic policies of our country have created this immigration problem. And until we go back to free, to fair trade, and get rid of NAFTA and GATT and CAFTA and the World Trade Organization, we're going to continue to undermine the economies of other countries and force their people to come to our country to seek employment. But if we have a living wage, then people are going to go out there and work in the fields if they know they're making $15, $20 an hour.
Well, sure. And Brian, let me just run something past you, and this is sort of a little sanity check for me, because I'm no mathematician. I am certainly not an economist.
Yeah.
I'm a lost ball in high grass on a lot of that stuff. But, you know, I've heard all this business about, you know, all them illegal aliens is breaking Social Security. You know, half the time I listen to the Republican Party, it's like listening to Forrest Gump without the, without the intelligent half.
Right.
If you take the so-called illegals and you make them part of the American dream, and they get real paychecks from real employers that have that little four-letter acronym on the stub that says FICA, haven't you just added 11 million workers worth?
Yes, you have.
Of viability to the Social Security Trust Fund?
Very much so. And you know what else, though? I mean, by the programs that I'm proposing will reduce immigration, because hopefully will enhance and help the economies of Mexico and of Guatemala and of the Dominican Republic. I mean, part of my platform, I'm proposing a Marshall Plan for Latin America as well. So, I mean, I'm really going.
Well, you know, some of this is in line with your with some of your previous lives working in social justice and things like that,
yeah.
Brian. Some of the listeners may not know.
Yeah,
that,
but it's practical, though. It makes
sure
business sense.
Yeah, it does make business sense. Being decent to human beings makes business sense. Paying your workers a living wage makes good business sense. One of the fundamental comparisons, say, take Costco and Sam's Club, for instance. Costco has considerably lower employee turnover than Sam's Club does, and maintains a consistently competitive price structure with Sam's Club.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is their workers stay with them for literally entire careers. And that makes for a better business experience for a consumer. Oh, I hate that word. For a person going in and shopping at the establishment, because they can say, hey, you know, where are the ceiling fans? And the guy goes, oh, well, they've been back there for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So there doesn't. We've got a false dichotomy in this country of business versus working people.
Yeah, I think really a lot of these ideas make good business sense. You know, and it's this issue about the Republicans supporting this administration, and they are so abusive of the dignity of human beings. I mean, depriving them of their rights to a fair trial and to have evidence provided and allow them to go into court and to send some of these prisoners over to foreign countries so we can abuse them. I mean, how American is that? Where are we getting off on this thing? You know, I mean, this is intolerable. I really do think that not only are a strong percentage of Republicans fed up and afraid of Catherine Harris, but I think that they're embarrassed by the President of the United States. I really think his impeachment is around the corner. He will not survive the next 2.5 or 3 years.
From a legal procedural standpoint, I'm sure you mean.
Well, yeah. I mean, the evidence is mounting by the day. Look at the Senate Foreign Relations report Thursday or Friday.
Right.
You know, on Osama bin Laden and Chalabi and weapons of mass destruction. And this 5-year anniversary just reminds us of how badly this thing was handled.
And, you know, to bring it back a little closer to home, Brian, you mentioned, you know, if you reelect Bill Nelson, you get the Patriot Act, you get the war, you get the detention, you get anti-immigrant.
You get tax breaks for the wealthy with Bill Nelson.
Right.
Hurt the middle class with Bill Nelson.
Right. And by comparison, if you elect Catherine Harris,
yeah,
you get the Iraq War, you get the Patriot Act. You get anti-immigrant policies.
Right.
You get tax breaks for the rich.
You're right. The same thing. There's twiddledee and twiddledum. There's no difference, okay? The only thing that makes Democrats angry and fearful is that, you know, she was responsible for Al Gore's loss of Florida and the presidency in Florida. So, you know, there's a certain feeling of revenge, I guess.
Well, but it seems to me that given the fact that you've got, you call it Tweedledum and Tweedledee and Tweedledum, I call it Tweedledum and Tweedledumber. the point there is that with those two, you know, they're two sides of the same coin. You're the only one who's talking pro middle class, pro workers' rights. You know, I have no doubt you'd be in there 100% behind the Employees Free Choice Act that allows people to unionize on
definitely,
a card check.
Definitely. No question about it. But I mean, and not only that, but see, it would give Floridians a choice. It would give them an alternative to choose from. Right now, they don't have a choice. I mean, Catherine Harris got up at a forum, the one and only forum I was at in Sarasota, where we sat next to each other. She got up there first, and she said, "You've got a choice in this election between, you know, Bill Nelson, the liberal, or me, the conservative, and the that represents the Floridian more." I got up after her and I said, "I'm sorry, Miss Harris, you're mistaken. Bill Nelson is not a flaming liberal. 60%, 70% of the time, he votes with Bush. He, you know, he votes with the conservative institute, who's rated him as one of the top three Democrats to their liking.
Right behind Joe Lieberman and Ben Nelson, probably.
Yeah, probably so. So, I mean, you know, let's, if anything, allow me to give me some exposure, get me in the debates so they can hear a different idea. They're not going to hear anything. You know, that's why I got in the race in the first place, knowing the odds, the incredible odds that are against me, because I knew that neither of them were going to talk about the war, that neither of them were going to talk about our loss of our rights and our freedoms, nor need for national health insurance, and on and on and on. The Democrats are embarrassed, and the Republicans are embarrassed. Man, if I can tap into that, if I can get 20% from each side and then a lot of the independents, and then it'll come up with 34% of the vote. I mean, lightning can strike.
Yes, it absolutely can.
You're right. I mean, you know, I mean, and look, they're fed up with Congress. I mean, So we're pushing and we're hoping and we're, you know, it just takes one little break, you know. Even it could happen the last week of the campaign. All right?
Sure it could.
Yeah.
It absolutely could. And I reverence hard work, and I reverence commitment, and I reverence honesty. And Brian, you're manifesting all three of those things. And the fact that you're having trouble getting exposure is not in any way a reflection on you or your ideas. It is, in fact, a reflection of the abject, utter, uncompromised the corruption of our American electoral system. Because when a man who brings a message such as you bring cannot get included in a debate on the very things that you're taking positions on, then that tells me that the system is poisoned.
Yeah, they don't want to hear it. They're turning a blind eye. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Sure, it does. I mean,
yeah.
this is the same systemic level of negligence that, frankly, brought us September 11th, 2001.
And you know, the second debate's going to be sponsored by I think it's NBC. Which program is Tim Russert on?
That's Meet the Press.
Yeah, well, he's going to narrate the program, and their affiliate's going to sponsor the debate. You know, so there again, you have these establishment people that are so-called credible, and yet they refuse to be fair, be equitable, be democratic. I mean, of all times to be democratic, right?
Yeah.
I mean, aren't we talking about democracy now? I mean, does that just apply to certain situations?
Well, if it does, it's not democracy, Brian.
That's right. That is right. It's fascism.
Hello? Yeah.
It's a police state.
We keep coming back to that, and you know, it reminds me. I was in Washington D.C. last week, and I still have a core of very real idealism, and I was inspired to be there, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
And we were broadcasting live from a protest down on the Mall,
mm-hmm.
and in the middle of our program, all the screeching lights and the sirens and the howling vehicles and driving at unsafe speeds down Constitution Avenue and
yeah.
helicopters and, you know, Dear Leader was coming home. and I was just blown away by the dichotomy because one of my personal heroes is a woman named Anne Royal. She was one of the first publishing gadflies in this country, and she was one of the first to really stick it to the religious right, among other people.
Yeah.
And she, and this is the 1840s, she was responsible for the government's funding of the telegraph, by the way. So I consider her the first blogger. But she was in Washington, D.C. at one point, and she walked down to the tidal basin. And President Martin Van Buren was bathing, you know, that quaint old term, bathing.
Right.
You know, he was going for a skinny dip in the Potomac.
Right.
The President of the United States was. And she just picked up his clothes and said, "You know, when I get what I want, you get your clothes."
Good. There's a practical woman.
Yeah. Well, you know, so many. You know, that's why I keep saying, you know, it's like the old Grateful Dead song. Women are smarter. But there's the dichotomy. You know, a president who's unafraid to walk down to the edge of the Potomac River and go for a swim. And this little cowardly cretin who has to have 60 automobiles to get him from Andrews Air Force Base to the White House. And I was just struck. I was struck by all of that because I was reminded, Brian, that it's very easy to live in a fascist state. Keep your head down. Keep your nose out of. You know, let the other let other people worry about the politics
yeah.
and the policy. Don't don't rock the boat.
Play it safe. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
don't
stay.
Don't get caught saying the wrong thing. Just keep quiet.
Right. And fascism's easy.
Bite your tongue. Yeah. Right. Until they take your rights away.
Right. Until they come for you.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, another thing, too, in addition to Bush's 60 cars and all that protection and security, you know, he's an aristocrat, and the Senate, you know, I think 40% to 50% of the senators are multimillionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Nelson and Catherine Harris are multimillionaires. You know, it's like the only people that can run now in our democracy are people that are wealthy. You know, that can afford to spend big dollars. And either you spend your personal fortune, which Catherine Harris is partly doing, or you're Bill Nelson and you take it from the corporations. You know,
it stays that way until we get campaign finance reform, right?
You better believe it. Yeah, but they don't want it, and it's against their interest, and so the system, you know, is corrupted. We have a corrupt political system in our country. I mean, that, you know, this is corrupt. We are corrupted.
Yes, it has been perverted. It did not start out perverse, Brian.
No, not at all.
It started out with some warts on it, because any time you found a country that calls itself free and an entire racial population is not free, I think you're messing with some bad karma there.
Yeah, and I think in Ralph Nader's book, he said that in 1898, the courts gave the Southern Pacific Railroad in California rights equal to the citizens of the country. And when that happened, all of a sudden corporations took on a new power, and they've never looked back. And you know, they've run the show. And we had a 20% turnout for the primary elections here in Florida last week. And some counties turned out 15% of the voting.
And that's counting Republicans and Democrats together.
Exactly, exactly. And why? Because they have given up on the system. They know it doesn't matter, no matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, no matter if you vote or not, they're all part of the corporate system that controls and dictates how legislation occurs in our country. So, I mean, I'm fed up with I know that you have a lot of Democratic listeners, but it's not going to be any better even if the Democrats take control, because they take their money from corporate America just like the Republicans do. And that's the essence, and this country is corrupted. And it's twiddledy or twiddledum. And Nelson is a graphic example of that. I mean, you think the guy would be smart enough to just vote moderately, but why he feels the need to vote conservatively, you know.
Well, but see, he's told that Florida is a conservative southern state.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, he has to vote for things, you know, he's got to have a flag burning amendment, Brian.
He votes conservatively, and he spends liberally. I mean, the Republicans... This Republican-run Congress is spending money like drunken sailors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our national debt, that's why there's a certain percentage of Republicans that are really in shock, that just cannot believe that we passed the Medicare bill for $800 billion. We're continuing a war that's going to cost a couple of trillion dollars. You know, it's on and on, and you know, it's our grandchildren that are going to suffer the consequences. So, you know, go ahead, corporate America and the corporate government, and you politicians. You know, I mean, I represent the majority of opinion in America. That's the irony.
Yeah.
Usually, a third party candidate is somewhat, as you say, radical or different or holds a minority opinion. And yet, today, I hold the majority opinion. Most people are against the war. Most people want us to pull out of Iraq. Most people think Congress is corrupted and unresponsive and unrepresentative of their needs. And so what do? We continue to go to war. We continue to promote warrantless searches and just, you know, support an administration that is threatening our freedoms. So, you know, I'm the guy that's really, you know, to me, that represents more of a Democratic electorate than they do.
Well,
they have the money.
I share your thoughts and your feelings, Brian, else you wouldn't be on this program. And I mean, I'm not trying to be snotty or anything, but the fact of the matter is you do. You've got a majority viewpoint. You're speaking to the people. Well, I mentioned my trip to D.C. I interviewed a man from Hollywood, Florida. A man named Carlos Arredondo. He's the man who set the Marine's van on fire a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I sat there and I interviewed him. I talked with him off air at length. And, you know, he's going around. He's trying to get the message out. You know, he parks a van a pickup truck with a casket in it in front of Lieberman's office. And frankly, that's a place for that kind of yours. You know, your position will actually save American lives. And I don't know how that's not mainstream, Brian.
Right. But mainstream doesn't win. And that's why people quit voting. It's not winning. Mainstream is not winning in America.
No,
that's the point. That's the issue right here. It's special interest. It's corporate interest. You know, they are the ones that control our country and our lives and our airways.
And I just assume that they stopped.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to stop. And it's going to stop one way or the other. It's going to stop because of our policies, we're going to promote more anger and hatred among either the Islamic culture or culture in Africa or South America. Or we're going to have social problems at home. I mean, how long do you continue to force people to have only make enough money that they're lucky to buy food and rent a house?
and then they got to make choices about gas and the wore out car.
Right. And
sure.
So you turn to drugs and you turn to crime, you know, and you turn to beating your wife and you turn to social problems. And, you know, we are creating these things, and the society can only take so much.
Well, and there's one more factor that works into this, Brian, and that is also left to their own devices as they have been. Corporate America will behave like the aforementioned drunken sailor. The aforementioned drunken sailor spends himself broke. And then engages in really, really bad behavior. And, you know, the corporate, you know, left unregulated, left untended, left unpoliced.
You mean like the healthcare system is now?
Yeah, they'll destroy, they will
right.
eat themselves alive.
They are. They're destroying, they're right. They're eating themselves alive. And now they want out. Ford and General Motors, you know, get us out of having to offer healthcare. You know, so that's why I am promoting governmental plans, okay, health care for all Americans, a living wage for all Americans. Let the government administer them. The private sector has failed. They have dropped the ball, and they don't know how to run correctional systems either.
No.
So, I mean, you know, there's no monitoring, there's no accountability, there's no independent auditing, and there's too much power given to them. I mean, I don't look at corporate America needs to make a profit.
Sure.
Fine. And they provide the jobs, the majority of jobs in our country. Fine. I want them to stay in America. I want them to pay a decent wage to our employees and benefits, and I want them to survive. But they're not going to survive and do well under this system.
Well, they are, in point of fact, and engaging in the kind of self-destructive behavior that if it was a physical person instead of a corporate person, you'd be having an intervention, Brian.
But don't they get it? Don't they get it? It's in their own self-interest?
No, because no, they don't. Because where the CEOs are concerned, it's not in their self-interest. The CEO's concern is that of expanding the corporate golden parachute. So, I mean, you know, we've got a coal baron up here named Don Blankenship, Brian. He has promised to take away West Virginia's government, to buy West Virginia's legislature away from it, to not allow us to pick our own representatives, because he's going to get himself a passel of so-called conservative Republicans who will let him blow up every mountain that he lays his eye on. This man is paid $33 million a year, and his company hemorrhages money. Okay? They lose money, and he continues to make it. And, you know, he's not alone. The same thing can be said for the CEO. Well, you know, Bill Ford just stepped down at Ford. The same thing applies at GM. These guys, and it's a direct contradiction of everything that Adam Smith lays out in The Wealth of Nations, because in the corporate structure that he envisions, you know, the workers bear the risk and the owners of the company bear the risk,
mm-hmm.
and they both bear to some degree in the rewards. We have a corporate system that has been allowed to run unchecked, Brian, so that the risk, there's no risk. You can run a multi-billion dollar corporation into the ground and still come out smelling like a rose. Ken Lay dropped dead, supposedly. I personally think he's living with Elvis somewhere. You know, he drops dead before he can be formally convicted and sentenced. And as a result of that, Mrs. Lay gets to keep all the money that he stole from Enron shareholders. You know, there is, and that's why, you know, that's why I say that, you know, you say, don't they understand? They understand. They understand that the deck is stacked in their favor. They are no longer accountable to their shareholders. They're not accountable to their consumers. They are accountable only to their, you know, 0.1% class of the American culture.
Right. But here is where we get to the issue that I addressed last time, and then you brought it up and recognized it, and that's morality and ethics. And I'm a practicing Catholic, okay? And the previous Pope did write an encyclical a couple of years ago laying out the obligations, the ethical and moral obligations of corporations toward the communities that they serve, and that they have failed in this. And that there is a standard of ethics and obligation that they have to bear, and they have you know, abdicated that. So why have we lost that element? You know, what has ever happened to morality? I mean, you talked about the Christian conservative or the Christian coalition. Well, what about good old common sense, fair play,
yeah,
and justice?
Right.
You know, and moral obligation to serve your fellow man and to give rights to the workers and to give them a fair and decent wage. You know, and recognize their need to raise their family. You know, we'll give you, you know, we'll recognize your right to make a profit. But you know, let's have some fair play here. But why have our leaders, our political leaders, and the two-party system, you know, forgotten that? Why
aren't
they listening
to that? We've given them no incentive to remember it, Brian, and I think that's what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think you are trying to because there is incentive to be moral. There is incentive to be just. You know, we cannot continue in this path and expect that American workers whose wages, you know, the middle class, you know, that's what runs this country. The middle class's wage value is dropping and dropping and dropping. The value of the minimum wage at this point in time is at a low of 50 years.
Yeah.
A 50-year low. You can, and the thing is, working people, the middle class, you know, we're not stashing money away in bank accounts in Liechtenstein and the Cayman
right.
Islands. You give a break to the middle class goes out and buys a refrigerator.
Right. Well, you know, I feel a little bit uncomfortable in promoting a program that just benefits the lower class, because I recognize that the middle class is really taking it. I mean, you know, it's almost disappearing.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we have to really bring home.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, Brian, if you unionize America, you won't need a minimum wage anymore.
Right. That's right.
Because we're talking there about living wages.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I brought this up before. You can unionize all you want, but then if you send the company over to Pakistan, the union, you have nobody to represent.
Right.
So we got to keep those companies here in America so that they can be unionized and be treated fairly. And there is a place for corporate America in the whole realm of things. I mean, it's a balance. It's fairness. That's
exactly
all we're asking for. But no, it's the almighty dollar. It's, you know, it's the investor. It's, you know, get, you know, keep squeezing, squeezing, squeezing. And what? The American worker is more productive now than ever before and making less.
Mm-hmm.
And his buying power is less. You know, so
yeah,
it's a radical change, but it really shouldn't be a radical change. It should be something decent and normal and moderate and acceptable.
And common sense, the
right,
phrase you
common
used.
Common sense.
It's only common sense to empower those who make America work.
So let's get rid of Bush and let's get rid of giving power to corporate America and the special interests, and let's elect representatives from across the spectrum. That are just not lawyers or people with a lot of credentials, but have integrity. And, you know, bring back the America to what it was before. Bring back the worker. Bring, you know, let's have. I mean, I watched a replay this morning, a little bit of the 3 hours of what happened 5 years ago. You know, it's just so frightening, you know, and it didn't have to happen. It did not have to happen.
No.
You
it
know,
didn't.
We plan our economic policies. Many of our policies have created this. You know, it's like, you know, people are saying these fascist Islamics. Well, I say these fascist American policies, these greedy policies that have violated the decency and the common sense of people in other nations. And we've undermined their economies. So we are partly responsible for this attack.
We absolutely are. I, you know, one of the things that kind of took me aback today, Brian, was the fact that I was listening. You know, we run a newscast at the top of the hour, and you know how the Coca-Cola Corporation marked 9/11 today?
No.
They opened a $25 million bottling plant in Kabul.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's gonna.
There
that,
you go.
That's gonna make Afghan lives better.
Boy, they sure learned a lesson, didn't they?
Sure did. I'm so grateful for the time that you spent with us, and I'm so glad that you can tell people where you are, what you believe. Frankly, I think there's a very good reason why Mrs. Harris and Mr. Nelson don't want you on a stage with them, Brian. Because frankly, if you get an opportunity to talk your common sense, they're both gonna be put to shame.
Well,
and I think the people of Florida deserve an opportunity to hear from you. And frankly, I would call upon our Florida listeners. I would, you know, I'd call upon our national listeners to contact who all, Brian, sponsoring the debate? Tell us again.
Well, National Public Radio is one sponsor for the first debate, and NBC and Tim Ross, Russert, is it NBC? Or?
Yeah, that's NBC.
Yeah, they're the second sponsors for the second debate.
Well, you know, those organizations need to be contacted, and a demand needs to be set out that you deserve, as part of an erstwhile honest political process, to be included in those debates.
You know who's, a co-sponsor of the first debate is the Florida Journalist Association. The newspaper guild, or whatever they call it.
Well, I'm sure that already there's someone out there who is looking up contact for all of those organizations, Brian.
Yeah.
And we will make sure that folks have an opportunity to contact them and tell them, let Brian Moore debate.
Could I mention my website?
You absolutely may.
Okay, it's votebrianmoore.com. www.votebrianmoore.com.
M-O-O-R-E, right?
Correct.
Okay, and that will be prominently posted on our website in short order.
Thank you, Bob.
Brian, thank you so much, and thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for the dialogue that you're trying to initiate. We're with you, and I want to hear good news.
Well, thank you.
I want to hear good news in November.
You're the one who's providing the service to America.
We try.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
And my best regards to your staff. I've really enjoyed my correspondence with them.
Okay, with Darcy and Gail.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now. Brian Moore, Green Party endorsed candidate for Senate in the state of Florida. Like I said, I hesitate to get involved in third party causes, but Florida doesn't have a choice outside of Brian Moore, because, you know, I mean, you heard it. Bill Nelson voted for the war. Catherine Harris would support the war. Bill Nelson, Patriot Act. Catherine Harris, Patriot Act. Bill Nelson, anti-immigrant. Catherine Harris, anti-immigrant. Bill Nelson, arguably anti-labor. Catherine Harris, certainly anti-labor. Panderers, both of them. Common sense and straight talk. That's what Brian Moore offers. So I would suggest, Agnes, we haven't broken away for a little bit. I think I've been talking nonstop for about, well, I'm excited to get back tonight. I'm excited to be back with you guys. We will take a little bit of break and be right back. Take your phone calls. Number, of course, 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Oh, it's a long, long time from May to December, and the days grow short when you reach September, when the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame, and you ain't got
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Minutes past the hour, and I've got a little programming note for you. We've got a special treat for you tomorrow evening. Down at West Virginia State University and Institute West Virginia, they will be having a forum called Bush and the Constitution tomorrow evening. And I'm very proud to say that that forum will be broadcast live during my time slot. And you will hear real expertise about what George Bush has done in terms of violating the Constitution of the United States. I think you will enjoy it. It should run, now I'm talking Eastern time here, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., and then from 9 p.m. onward, perhaps we can get a couple of the panelists over, and if you've got any extra questions, you can ask them. Sound cool? I think it does. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Sarge calling from Southern Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for waiting as long as you did.
Oh, no problem. That was a good interview. That guy really is sharp.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. And I think not letting him in on the debates in Florida is just about a crime.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about this. We got to vote for a Democrat and don't vote for a third party in these elections. And I'm kind of starting to think, well, maybe that's not really as true as it if they try to make it sound, because we got a lot of these DLC Democrats, Dinos.
Well, not only that. The DLC people I couldn't care less about. But Sarge, you know, I do hold the line on presidential elections.
Oh yeah.
Because you get two choices, and frankly, any time that there's a third choice in a presidential election, it is distinctly designed to draw votes away from one or the other of the candidates. Ross Perot was out there to beat George H.W. Bush. Nader was put in there to take the election away from Al Gore.
Yeah, we really got a bad need to go to our several parties, major parties, all of them that works, and put the Republican Party way down yonder underneath the cemetery.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, some of these Dinos, like Lieberman, Pelosi even, you know, they just make me so mad. Pelosi is, she's corporate as all get out. I've tried to talk with her and interview her, and I had to chase her for a month, even with emails. She had returned my emails with, because you're not one of my constituents, I cannot talk to you.
Well,
out of congressional courtesy. And so Morrison looked it up, and there was no such thing at the time.
No. Now, they won't take your emails if you don't give them a zip code in their little email form from inside their constituency.
Yeah, and then when you get that, they return it back to you.
Right.
And so, you know, what I was checking on with her was that she had made that statement that she would not support, she didn't want to bring impeachment on the table because it would unite the GOP voters, which to me is a pile of crock, because if they want to use it, they will use it. Plus, why did she just go out and make a political issue out of what is a matter of constitutional violation? You know.
Well, that's the significant issue. Now, for the most part, Nancy Pelosi, where I'm concerned, I like a lot of the positions she takes. She's not strong enough to suit me, but I recognize that a lot of politicians in Washington are not going to go places that I want them to go because they're afraid they won't get reelected.
Yeah, well, she's got a real heavy corporate backing too. She's kind of scared to walk away from them. I've done a real detailed investigation onto her, and she's not what she seems. She's okay. I can live with her, but I would rather see a real liberal in there.
Well, you know, I like I'm a John Conyers fan. I mean, I just am what I am.
Oh, you can't beat Conyers.
I'm a Dennis Kucinich fan. There are a few other members of Congress that really, really inspire me. And I mean that's where I am on the political spectrum, Sarge. And I suspect something similar probably is the case with you. I am a hardcore progressive. I believe in progressive ideals. I believe that we need to bring health care to all Americans. I believe that we need to make this country. You know, I don't believe in bombing the snot out of countries that have never done anything to us. But by the same token, if some crazy little rat somewhere else wants to float a nuke into Miami or New York or Hampton Roads, Virginia, I don't want that to happen. I want port security. I want to be able to know that we're not going to bring some. But of course, that qualifies me as a radical, I guess, according to the GOP and maybe even some Democratic circles.
Yeah, it's just like Afghanistan. I've got an article on my column today about Afghanistan, and it's from someone who's living through it. And he tells of all the horrors and the trash that's gone on since the war there. And it's just awful when you look at – and they blame Bush. They blame Bush, so that means they don't like us a whole lot. And that's scary, you know.
Yeah. There's been more done to the image of the United States in the last 6 years than we can even begin to contemplate.
Yeah, I mean, look at Katrina. Look what's going on down here in Jackson County and stuff. I mean, it's just Jackson County is ripe for terrorist recruitment. You know, I mean, you could build a terrorist outfit in Jackson County with no problem at all. And then they go, and instead of taking care of business, they go and they try to charge Greg Palast with some...
Oh, I know. Does that just blow you away or what?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just, you know, I sent him an email and told him he and I were supposed to have an interview together, and I told him, let's just wait until this thing blows over and then we'll get together. But and he, I told him not to send one back, and he did anyway. That's Greg.
Yeah, but Greg, you know, just to, for people who aren't, who may not be up on it, Sarge, Greg Palast just got a challenge from the FBI via Homeland Security because he took videotape of people who were basically in internment camps, you know, barbed wire, the works, Katrina refugees. But in the process, he also took pictures of an Exxon refinery next door, and that was a violation of Homeland Security.
Yeah. Hey, Bruce Birch has told me to say terrorist 20 more times.
Mm-hmm.
But can we just skip that 20 times and you just say it?
Yeah, sure. Terrorist. Okay.
Hey, listen, before I hang up, I want to invite everybody to powersandmorrison.com, and we have a brand new message board set up, and it's very well moderated, and so everybody should have a good time, and who knows, you might see Bruce Birch or John Fox or even Bob Kincaid drop in.
Yeah, I from time to time, I actually turn myself loose on a keyboard, Sarge. It's a dangerous and terrifying proposition.
Yeah, that's what got me in trouble. Hey, Bob, thanks a lot, buddy, and it's nice to hear you back on the air.
I'm awful glad to be back, and good to hear from you, Sarge.
I hope you stayed away from that. Wait a minute, did you take a good shower when you came home? Because you were awful close to W.
I tell you what, I scrubbed with antibacterial soap twice.
You used a steam cleaner. Okay, Bob, we'll see you, buddy.
Later now, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
You take care. A good friend, Sarge. Jackson County, Mississippi. Also, another good friend calling from south of the Mason-Dixie line, our buddy Roy from Texas. Hey, Roy, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm glad to hear it.
I've sat here and listened to those last two people on and enjoyed that. I've got one thing to say, though.
Okay.
For God's sake, we don't want Catherine Harris winning nothing.
No.
Don't want that bitch.
No, and she is that. She is absolutely that.
Enough said on her.
And I think, you know, I think Brian would be the first to say that he, you know, and the point Brian's trying to make is that they're both poison.
Well, I understand what he's saying. I understand that. But I'm going to have to stay with the two-party system.
Well, I understand that.
I do see exactly what he's saying. And the whole bit.
You know, if Brian succeeds in helping Bill Nelson to see a little bit of the light, then I think he will have been effective.
Right.
I would cherish an opportunity. I would cherish a system that allowed a man like Brian Moore to actively participate and be able to run campaigns where he gets to talk about the issues. I frankly think the fact that he's not being invited to these debates in Florida is it's downright undemocratic, Roy.
It's terrible. It's terrible. I totally agree with that.
Well, I tell you, it you know, I welcome these kind of candidates to the process. I do. And I, like I said with Sarge, I do draw the line on presidential campaigns. Because a third-party candidate is never anything but a spoiler.
Right.
From the candidacy of Eugene V. Back up even further, from the candidacy of Teddy Roosevelt and the Bull Moose Party forward, nothing but spoilers. And usually that works to our detriment. It certainly did in 2000.
That's right.
But, you know, the other thing is the Democratic Party needs to expand the tent, don't you think, Roy? Because, you know, everything that the Green Party stands for, at some time or another, has been part of the Democratic Party platform. The fact that there's a Green Party out there speaks to the fact that the Democrats are not doing a good enough job of outreach.
Yeah. Well, what I called about and wanted to graph about today.
Turn her loose.
Is changing. I am so sick of having to hear about him preaching to the country about we don't have the stomach for a Well, where in the hell was his stomach for war back in the days when he was young enough to be drafted, but he was out getting his deferment?
Oh, you mean when he had other priorities?
He had other priorities and wanted to not go to Vietnam.
Well, that was one of the priorities, Roy. You know,
but I don't think we need him preaching to us about Nazis, unpatriotic, all of that.
No, not at all. I mean, getting preached to about patriotism or history by Dick Cheney is like getting a lecture on chastity from a hooker.
You're right.
No, I was just, I knew I was going to wind up in trouble there, but I tried to keep it clean, Roy.
Oh, that's okay.
But it's awful good to hear from you.
Well, thank you very much.
And, in fact, I think I got a little bit of Cheney audio. I might even make your evening a little bit worse.
Oh?
I've got him from yesterday, from his appearance on Meet the Press.
Yeah.
Just disgusting stuff.
I didn't watch that because I knew the liar was going to be on, and I just don't watch him.
Well, no. Why bother? But, you know, there's a lot of there's a certain value in hearing what these evil people say.
I understand that, too.
All right. You take care, Roy.
Thanks.
Have a good one now. Bye. Okay, 20 minutes before the hour. Let's see. Agnes, I've got something. It's going to take a few minutes. I'd like you to roll it. A little piece that was sent to me, a song by Ani DeFranco that was sent to us by our good friend Ray Dean. This is the best way of memorializing this day that I can think of. Like I said, it takes a few minutes, but I think you'll enjoy it. Are you ready there? All right. We'll be back. Listen up. I'm Bob.
We're just poems. We're 90% metaphor, with a leanness of meaning approaching hyperdistillation. And once upon a time, we were moonshine, rushing down the throat of a giraffe. Yes. Rushing down the long hall, despite what the PA announcement says. Yes. Rushing down the long hall, down the long stairs in a building so tall that it will always be there. It's part of a pair. There on the bow of Noah's Ark. The most prestigious couple just kicking back, parked against a perfectly blue sky on a morning beatific in its Indian summer breeze. On the day that America fell to its knees. After strutting around for a century without saying thank you or please. And the shock was subsonic and the smoke was deafening between the setup and the punchline. Because we were all on time for work that day. We all boarded that plane for it to fly. And then while the fires were raging, we all climbed up on the windowsill. And then we all held hands and jumped into the sky. And every burrow looked up when it heard the first blast. And then every dumb action movie was summarily surpassed. And the exodus uptown by foot and motor car looked more like war than anything I've seen so far. So far. So far. So far. So fierce. An ingenious, a poetic specter so far gone that every jackass newscaster was struck dumb and stumbling over, oh my God, and this is unbelievable, and on and on. And I'll tell you what, while we're at it, you can keep the Pentagon, you can keep the propaganda, you can keep each and every TV that's been trying to convince me to participate in some prep school punk's plan to perpetuate retribution. Perpetuate retribution. Even as the blue toxic smoke of our lesson in retribution is still hanging in the air, and there's ash on our shoes, and there's ash in our hair, and there's a fine silt on every mantle from Hell's Kitchen to Brooklyn, and the streets are full of stories, sudden twists and near misses, and soon every open bar is crammed to the rafters with tales of narrowly averted disasters, and the whiskey is flowing like never before. As all over the country, folks just shake their heads and pour.
toast to all the folks that live in Palestine, Afghanistan, Iraq, El Salvador. Here's a toast to all the folks living on the Pine Ridge Reservation, under the stone cold gaze of Mount Rushmore. Here's a toast to all those nurses and doctors who daily provide women with a choice, who stand down a threat the size of Oklahoma City just to listen to a young woman's voice. Here's a toast to all those folks on death row right now, awaiting the executioner's guillotine, who are shackled there with dread and can only escape into their heads to find peace in a form of a dream. Peace in a form of a dream. Peace in a form of a dream. Cause take away our PlayStations and we are a third world nation, under the thumb of some blue blood royal son who stole the Oval Office and that phony election. I mean, it don't take a weatherman to look around and see the weather. Jeff said he'd deliver Florida, folks, and boy did he ever. And we hold these truths to be self-evident. Number one, George W. Bush is not president. Number two, America is not a true democracy. And number three, the media is not fooling me. Cause I'm a poem heating hyperdistillation, and I've got no room for a lie so verbose. Yeah. Yes, I'm looking out over my whole human family, and I'm raising my glass in a toast. Here's to our last drink of fossil fuels. May we bow to get off of this sauce. The swarms of commuter planes, find that train ticket we lost. Cause once upon a time, the line followed the river and peeked into all the backyards. And the laundry was waving and the graffiti was teasing us from brick walls and bridges. We were rolling over ridges, through valleys, under stars. I dream of touring like Duke Ellington in my own railroad car. Of waiting on the tall, blonde wooden benches in a grand station aglow with grace, and then standing out on the platform and feeling the air on my face. Give back the night its distant whistle. Give the darkness back its soul. Give the big oil companies the finger, finally, and relearn how to rock and roll. Yes, the lessons are all around us, and the truth is waiting there. It's time to pick through the rubble, clean the streets, and clear the air. Get our government to pull its big dick out of the sand of someone else's desert. Put it back in his pants with the hypocritical chance of freedom forever. Because when one lone phone rang in 2000, one at 10 after 9 on 911, which was the number we all call when that long phone rang right off the wall, right off our desk and down the long hall, down the long stairs in a building so tall that the whole world turned just to watch it fall. While we're at it, remember the first time around? The bomb, the rider truck, the parking garage, the princess that didn't even feel the pee. Remember joking around in our apartment on Avenue D? Can you imagine how many paper coffee cups would have to change their design following a fantastical reversal of the New York skyline? It was a joke at the time. And that was just a few years ago, so
Let the record show that the FBI was all over that case, that the plot was obvious and in everybody's face. And scoping that scene religiously, the CIA, or is it KGB, committing countless crimes against humanity with this kind of eventuality as its excuse for abuse after expensive abuse, and they didn't have a clue. Look, another window to see through. Way up here on the 104th floor. Look. Another key, another door. 10% literal, 90% metaphor. 3,000 some poems disguised as people on an almost too perfect day. Must be more than poems in some asshole's passion play. So now it's your job, and it's my job to make it that way, to make sure they didn't die in vain. Shh. Baby, listen. Hear the train. Us people.
Wow. Thank you, Ray Dean. That's Annie DeFranco. And I'll take that kind of poetry over some sort of hypocritical babbling any day of the week. You want to remember what happened on this day 5 years ago? Remember the way that negligence and hateful criminality changed the way we look at ourselves. Remember how the negligence of the Bush administration changed how so many Americans look at a person with a different headdress or a long beard. Remember the hate that unleashed upon the world. Let's go to the phones. Wayne joins us. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good, man, good. I've missed most of the show.
I'm sorry.
Union meeting, man.
Well, then that's worth it.
Yes, it is worth it. Yes, it is worth it. I love union people.
Yeah. They're union great. Cabbies?
Huh?
Union cabbies?
Oh, yeah, man. God, that was a great experience, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, D.C. was a great experience. I think, you know, I've been thinking about this, man. You know, I'm a veteran, man. You know, I'm an old guy, you know, and God, I love this country. I just love it so much. And to go there and yeah, I mean, if I didn't have other obligations, I swear to God, I'd get an apartment in downtown D.C.,
about a block from Stan's.
Oh, yeah, real close to Stan's. You think maybe they got an apartment right above it. You know? You know, I'd have to get about another dozen Worst President Ever T-shirts so I could wear one.
Yeah, you're going to have to tell Bart Cop about your Worst President Ever T-shirt experience.
I mean, that thing opened doors.
Yeah, it did.
People stopping you on the street, where'd you get that? I want one of those.
It's a conversation starter. It's a door opener. And, you know, I was walking around with you when you had that, when you had it on, and nobody said, you know, how dare you think about that, about the president.
Not one person.
No. Everybody that stopped you was like, I want that shirt.
Exactly. I thought that one big giant dude was going to take it away from me. I told him if it would fit
him. For a minute there, I thought you were going to give it to him.
I was going to, but it wouldn't have fit. He could have used it for a hanky for
big dude.
Big dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a wonderful experience. But that's what, you know, like, and it inspires you. I mean, it inspires you in the way that, you know, I mean, you know, when you look up at the Washington Monument and you see these monuments and these buildings and this wonderful country that great men have built, men and women.
Thank you.
You know, I don't mean to be.
No, that's okay.
You know, and then when you realize, I mean, like that idiot that interrupted our program, and I didn't realize that we weren't on the air at that time with, I don't know, what was it, 59 police escorts or?
Oh, it was obscene.
Oh, it was obscene. My God, you couldn't even hear yourself think for all the, you know. Because he had to go home and put on his footy pajamas and go to bed. It was ridiculous. And these people are destroying the wonderful country that I love. And you know, they got to be stopped. And the way to do that is to go to the polls and to vote. And, you know, we're experiencing it already, you know, and I've been warning people and telling people, you know, they are going to get nasty. They are going to get so unbelievably nasty, they're going to come up things that we couldn't even conceive of.
Oh, yeah.
They've already started.
No, you're not just whistling Dixie. I'm sitting here looking, and I don't know how this person even got my email address, but I got this thing the other day, and if I can find it real quick. Here it is. This guy just sends this to me. Of course, he doesn't have the what's that Serbian word for emboldenment?
False.
Yeah, he doesn't have that enough of that to call me and tell me this on the air. But it's titled "Liberals, Democrats, Socialists, Commies, You've Forgotten the Lessons of 9/11." And he goes down and he says, "President Bush says that he will not question the patriotism of those who disagree with him. However, I do question your patriotism. Why? Because you've not demonstrated any patriotism to America. Blah, blah, blah. You've demonstrated your support of the United Nations, the cheese-eating surrender monkeys, and the Ruskies, and the Krauts, and the Sprouts, who were actually profiting from terrorism. Blah, blah, blah." No, these ugly little cockroaches are coming out of coming out from under the baseboards.
That guy doesn't realize he hasn't come to the assumption that the guy that he probably voted to put in the White House could have stopped 9/11. But he sent the little CIA guys away and said, "Okay, you covered your ass."
Right.
The guy that wouldn't end his vacation.
Right.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah,
that guy.
Yeah. So he supports that.
Yeah.
And he writes.
Stupid guy.
Yeah, the stupid guy.
The
yeah.
Stupid guy. One cabbie referred.
Our buddy, the Teamster cabbie. Damn right. He said, "You know, you're not patriots, you're scum. I spit on you." And I was very polite, Wayne. I wrote back to him and I invited this little monkey to call me. Cowards.
No, he won't. Did he leave? I mean, you know, do you have his email address or did he block that out?
No, I got his email address. You want his email address?
Yeah.
Oh, hang on.
Why don't you post it? Well, I'll send him a little.
Yeah, encourage this little goober to call and tell me how it's really.
It's conversation radio. We'll listen to you, man.
Darn straight. You know? His name's Doc Farmer.
Doc Farmer?
Yeah, D-O-C Farmer, and his address is Doc Farmer. 9999.
Okay.
At yahoo.co.uk.
So he's from the UK?
No, I don't know. No, I don't think so. I think, you know, that's how it is with these hardcore little freaks. They're afraid they're afraid to stand out under, you know, under their own banners. You know, they're afraid to stand up, you know, because, you know,
he ain't got a
Now, see, he ain't.
He's not emboldened enough to wear a best president ever.
Yeah, where's the right wing's best president ever T-shirt?
Right, there you go.
Well, you know, that's like there's a book that's out now, co-authored by David Korn, and it's
The Nation.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's hitting the stands, and it's called. Yeah, see, I'm working here. It's called Hubris, and it's coming out soon, and it's got some quotes in there, you know. And frankly, I'm going to use dirty word here, Wayne.
Uh-oh.
It's got a quote of George Bush talking to a an aide about Helen Thomas. And this is what the press release says. When told that reporter Helen, and see, this isn't like the mockumentary on ABC, Wayne. This is a real quote. This isn't made up. When told that reporter Helen Thomas was questioning the need to oust Saddam by force, Bush snapped, "Did you tell her I intend to kick his sorry motherfucking ass all over the Mideast?"
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, what a nice guy we've got in the White House.
But he's such a religious man, Bob.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, friend of Jesus. You know, but there's nothing new in this. You remember the story about what happened when the Newsweek reporter was in there and they popped in there and there was a conference going on and somebody said, "Well, you know, what about Saddam?" And this is like 2002 and he says, "F Saddam, we're taking him out." You know, I'm tired of the damn lies.
Exactly.
You know,
and they don't even have enough guts to, you know, say what they wanted to.
You know, so yeah. So if I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky, is enough to support an impeachment? Then in 2002, a guy who says F Saddam, we're taking him out.
Right, and then going back to Helen Thomas, wasn't it? Tony Snow said to Helen Thomas, thanks for the Hezbollah view.
Oh, yeah, and Ann Coulter calls her that hateful old Arab.
Yeah, right.
Nice people, these.
Yeah, real nice people. Real nice people. But it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
They're going to get nastier, but we just have to hold together.
And, it's going to get junkyard dog mean, and we better be daggum ready for it, Wayne.
Just, you know, be ready. Just go, you know, get your people out to vote. We have to win overwhelmingly, you know, because, I mean, these people are going to target every chance that the Democrats have of taking back a House seat. That's what, you know, their plan is to limit the gain to 5 or 6, and we need 15.
Yeah.
And, you know, keep the people, you know, wherever you are, wherever you're listening, remember that. You know, don't fall into the trap. They're looking at, you know, they're looking at challengers and Democratic incumbents. They're looking at their tax rate. I mean, they're going back years, and they have the money and the people and the, you know, the know-how to go back into these court records and divorce
sure.
records. And they're going to bring out things that, you know, and then they're going to, shall we say, stretch the truth.
No,
you know they will.
They're
going to
take the truth.
Lie.
They're going to take the truth out back behind the barn and beat it bloody.
Exactly, and don't fall for their baloney.
Yeah,
don't
and frankly, if you're somewhere and you're in a congressional district that has a safe Democrat, then help the Tony Trupianos, help the John Lashes, help the Ned Lamonts, help Brian Moore.
And, you know, if I may add, you know, there's no Democrat safe with these idiots.
Well, there's truth in that, too.
I mean, you know, look what they did to, Max
Cleland, sure.
Look what they did to him, you know. You know, look what they've done to John Kerry. Look what they've done to, you know, their boy McClain.
Yeah.
McCain.
Yeah, sure. They'll eat their own. You're absolutely right. Wayne, we've run way over time, man. I got to get out of here.
Oh, my golly. It's 10 o'clock?
It is. All of that in a bag of chips. We'll talk to you later.
I'll be talking to you.
All right. See ya.
All right. Bye.
Bye now. Hey, wow. Sorry. Didn't mean to run over. My bad. We got to go. The program, of course, Agnes, the program, of course, was produced by my darling, lovely, talented wife, Agnes, who's in a hurry to end the program now. It was engineered by John Fox, chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network in Sydney, Australia, announced by Brian Reznor, Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives of all the programs on the Head On Radio Network. Our streaming partner is also RadioPower.org and our friend Shelby LePre. Every program on the horn happens because of the dedication of several thousand members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream, and in supporting the growth of this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, always, always. RMR. It's all for you.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best... Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.